And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Field, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA Utiful Studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Okay, Sean Wilkinson from Storage. Sean, decentralize everything. Wilkinson is a founder and lead developer of the Storage Project, which aims to bring cheaper, more secure peer-to-peer cloud storage to the masses. He received a BS in computer science from Morehouse College and has been deeply involved in cryptocurrencies ever since 2012. Storage, STORJ.io, decentralized cloud storage. It's based on blockchain technology and peer-to-peer protocols to provide the most secure, private, encrypted cloud storage. We are getting ulcers in anticipation of storage becoming available for everybody for everything. Sean, welcome to the show. How you doing, man?
I'm doing just fine.
Okay. The reason we asked Sean to come on, he was so gracious to, honor us with his attendance, is that he was attendant at the Satoshi Roundtable at undisclosed Caribbean Island Resort. And the first thing that we're thinking, we're going, yeah, we know the list of the guys here we want to talk to and see what's up. In a technology where you have a trustless type, I guess, decentralized, it's more than that, it's distributed system to where we're to have faith in a system instead of men, with shiny badges telling people what to do. And really what it is, it's faith in math. And we're going, okay, let's do that. We're going down that road. And then we have a gathering of the peoples on an island out where you're not going to, whoa, wait a minute. Wait a minute. So let's go ahead and see if we can get a bead on what happened, good view on the inside from Sean, if there's anything for us to be concerned about, what was discussed, directions that were to be chosen. So I'm just like, Sean, help me out. Tell me how and when you were invited to Satoshi Roundtable, how it went, and we'll just talk for a while and tell me what's up.
Sure. So a brief overview, I guess, of what I do and kind of how I got involved in it. So like you stated before, I work for Storage. So essentially we're building out an encrypted cloud storage platform that you can store your files, but the third party who stores the file doesn't have access to it, because who trusts Dropbox and Google Drive with all your stuff anyways?
Right.
And the other portion is that people can kind of get paid to sell their extra hard drive space. So we use people instead of a magical data center.
Okay, now this is so right off
part
the...
Of that,
I'm sorry, Sean. Go ahead, please.
So as part of that, I do a lot of business development and go around to a lot of conferences to promote storage and A, tell people about it, and B, talk with other Bitcoin companies and other businesses to A, get them to use the service, and B, say, oh, we can use your Bitcoin technology in our Bitcoin technology project. So I go to a lot of conferences. In the past couple of months, I've been to CES and then Bitcoin Miami conference and then this Satoshi Roundtable.
How?
I actually like this this one a lot better than the others because it was a bit of a smaller gathering, right? So normally when you go to Bitcoin conferences, there are a couple hundred people, pretty crowded, pretty fun, and you get to meet a lot of people. But it's also, again, the same people as well. There's a lot of people from the Bitcoin space that keep on going to these conferences, so you get to know quite a few people. So this one was invite only. I guess I was one of the invitees along with a lot of other people in the space.
When were you invited? How were you invited? Who selected the list of who got invited?
So this is a conference that Bruce Fenton was kind of putting on. So
when did he start planning this?
I'm not sure. I guess I got in probably about 2 weeks before the conference. I heard about it at the end of the Miami conference. Okay. So I got in after that. So I've met him a couple of times at various conferences. So
then they sent out the invitations. We're going to, where was it anyway? Which island? I mean, we can tell now. I mean, I heard.
Yeah, it's all done now, so I guess that's all right. So it was in the Dominican Republic.
Okay, we kind of got that news, but not that I care. I wasn't there. Okay, so you go to the Dominican Republic. Was there a reason why Dominican Republic?
I don't think there was a particular reason for that country. I guess it's just the venue was down there. So
okay, so we go to Dominican Republic. You have, I suppose, you know, a nice room that is semi-air conditioned with a beach, and you get in there and you have a meeting. And was it just Saturday and Sunday, a Friday night thing? Was the presentations of everybody, were you being told what was what? I mean, how did the conference go and spoke?
Friday, and I left Sunday. So the actual discussions and conference was on Saturday and Sunday.
Okay. Now, the presentations, were people invited, many of them got to speak, or was it just a pep rally? I mean, was there something being communicated to the crowd?
Yeah,
I mean,
so
why did you have it?
It was essentially a smaller room, and people were giving their presentations. They're a lot shorter than a normal conference, so they're probably about, the average ones were probably about 10 minutes instead of 30 minutes. But it was a little nicer. It was a little bit more homey. It wasn't some person standing up on a stage and blabbing with a PowerPoint for 30 minutes. It was more of a quick discussion of their business or their product or their experience, and then a lot more questions afterwards. So one of the things that I absolutely hate is when you're not allowed to question, I guess, the speaker or you know what they're doing and find more about it. And so that actually happened at the last conference I had came from, where people gave 30-minute presentations and absolutely no questions. So it was great to kind of sit there and ask people more about their product or the business or whatever they're doing.
So what was the purchase, I mean, the purpose of the event? I mean, is it something from somewhere being explained, or is it just getting a feel for, or everybody presenting each other, seeing where you're at? I mean, there's a lot. See, this is, look at it from my perspective, Sean. I have Ross Ulbricht gets guilty, guilty, guilty. Same day, Ben Lasky from the Department of Financial Services in New York says this is how you're going to be ruled. Then you start having stories coming out about how the Pentagon and military and freaking SEAL Team 6 and, oh my God, the combat paramilitary units of the CIA are in there looking at terrorism and Bitcoin and blah, 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 blah. And it just, I mean, you can see what's this psychological psyop battle is going on for the direction of Bitcoin, and then boom, some of the major guys are down on an island. I mean, and then I just in October, you know, when I was in Coins in the Kingdom, I do my little speech, and the first thing I said, we got to be careful we don't have a Jekyll Island in Bitcoin. And then what do? You know, so that's why you guys are on. I want to find out, ask some pointed questions of what the atmosphere was, what was being talked about, was there any decision, everybody got to present, and it was just a what. Well, Sean Wilkinson's helping us out, and I really appreciate it. We have a lot of guys coming on. You know, I'll give you a list of the people coming on this next week. It'll be awesome.
This is Charles Goyette, author of the New York Times.
Yeah, we'll go over that. Don, I need that list. Where's the list of the people this week that you had? Or I can just do it in that article. Okay. This is, we have David Johnston. Johnston's coming on after you. And then, here, let me get to the, I got a little Satoshi Antel recap, blah, blah, blah. It's on the front page of Freedom's Phoenix, and it gives the list.
Yeah, let's see. I'm good friends with David.
You, David Johnston, Eric Voorhees on Friday. Next Wednesday is Paul Snow. And then Bruce Fenton's going to be on, looks like next week, and so is Jeffrey Tucker. So some of the other guys that we've had on before, it's been invited, Jason King, Ira Miller, Roger Ver, David Bailey. So, you know, and then Vitalik Buterin, I haven't had on before. So I really look forward to talking to him. I met him before at, I think, Porkfest and stuff. But so we're just trying to get a beat on this because there was such a big, giant, oh, my God, I can't believe, you know, I'm going, well, we'll just call these guys. Hey, Sean, what's up? Tell me what happened, you know? So, the, but you can understand the timing of a lot of this stuff. I'm just going, ew. And this is right when, you know, Wall Street gets involved in the space. And then, of course, they're going to want, you know, how long can they, you know, help Uncle Sam achieve orgasm? So, you know, I'm going, this is, there's the flavor and the things behind the scenes and the reason for even having it. And I'm trying to get that down. When we come back, can you help me out with that?
Sure.
Okay, you were all there and having a good time, my ties, but I'm going, okay, why? I mean, why? Right? Is it, you know, a Bruce Fenton campaign event or something or what? I mean, you know, I'm trying to get an idea of why. You see my point?
Sure.
All right, other than just vacation. All right, we'll be back in just a little bit.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock. Oh, we have Sean Wilkinson on from Storage. Now, he's a popular individual with a popular way of storing things that get to be decentralized and distributed, and you know, none can get it, and we can have it in privacy and kind of, oh, I want to talk to that guy, you know? So we just, Donna just got an email from Roger Ver that said, and quote, not much to publicly discuss from that meeting, so you don't want to come on. And so I'm going, Sean, there's not much to publicly discuss. Is that we shouldn't be doing this? What's up?
Sure. So I guess there's a lot of people that see this meeting as, I don't know, some kind of what did someone describe it as? A Bilderberg for Bitcoin, I guess. And I don't know, I don't kind of see it that way. There's been a large kind of want for a meeting like this, and I'll describe it. So I go to a lot of Bitcoin conferences, and one of the problems is that the venues get a little crowded and a little loud. So actually, the Miami conference that I went to last, like a couple weeks ago, I actually almost lost my voice just trying to scream at people just to talk to them 5 feet in front of me at the kickoff party. And I actually had to speak at that event. So that wasn't, you know, so great. So it's nice to have kind of a smaller event where I could actually sit down and talk to people and do biz dev and talk about what should be the next technology that we should be pushing and hitting for.
Well, was that the focus? See, just tell me out. I mean, the meeting was for what?
It was a Bitcoin conference like any other.
Which means?
So the idea is just to get companies together and have them do biz dev and have them discuss problems. And it's just like any other Bitcoin conference that you would go to.
Okay, well, let me tell you what, at any other Bitcoin conference I would go to, after we have the New York Department of Financial Services says this is how thou shalt, you know, conduct yourself in the space, and anybody have even a single opinion about that thing that just happened days before at this event, you think, maybe, huh?
No, I really didn't discuss that with anyone. I still have to read the second draft. So I'll do that in the next couple of days.
So I'll skip to the end here. My thing is that I'm going, okay, when we had the Bruce Fenton and Cody Wilson three-hour debate on the show, all right, the next day Andreas Antonopoulos came on for a couple hours to do a postmortem on it, and we had a good discussion. And my thing was, I'm going, okay, you know, Bruce seemed nice enough guy, but the point is that it's like, well, he need wide adoption of security in the space for, you know, the man to know and work with and kind of something, all right? So I'm going, well, of course, Cody's thing is just totally do away with the Bitcoin Foundation, but I'm thinking, does Bitcoin need the foundation? Is Bitcoin able to operate without, will it continue to operate without government permission slips? Now, I can understand exchanges and whoever wants to interface with the bank. I did an experiment to go through. Okay, I tell you, this is how it is. I mean, just so you see, whenever you interface with the banking system, you have these issues that Bitcoin was promised to eliminate. I go on Circle, I get some Bitcoin. When it was down to 170, I go, hell, out of principle, I just want to get some. Nobody would sell it. So I go, all right, fine, I'll go on the Circle thing, we'll check this thing out. Now, of course, you know you're getting anal probed and so on, and I kind of not secret, so whatever. So I go in there, I do all this stuff. The next time I go to get to use my credit card, it was canceled. I called, we're at Drew Phillips from Bitcoin Not Bombs was here, helped me doing some studio stuff. We go to Sam Ash to get some cables. I go, your credit card's not, you know, I'm going to find out. I'll just stand here. I could have just went home, got some money, another credit card, whatever. But I'm just going, and it was my bank debit Visa. So I go in, and I have a bunch of stuff on that. You know, my Amazon accounts, you know, when I get my stuff, eBay and all this. So all of a sudden, all that, I have to redo everything. I'm like, what the hell? And I'm thinking, well, last time I was at Lowe's or something, maybe Home Depot, and then I remembered the last time I used it was at Circle buying Bitcoin. And they said that law enforcement gave them a batch of numbers, and they wouldn't tell me any more than that. That batch of numbers been compromised and boom and canceled. Now I got a shiny new card with a nice little chip in it. And I go, oh, yay. Then I go and I'm like, all right, we're doing the BitcoinSummit.info. So the Bitcoin Summit is going on Pi Day here. I go ahead and I say, all right, we're going to do, you know, BitPay, which we did for our Freedom Summit last year. So I go, all right, so we'll go ahead, BitPay. And I go, oh, I got this tier thing. I need to up it. So I'm talking to Tuxvet and I'm saying, look, man, how long before I can launch? Because I need to get this next tier approved in order to take more Bitcoin per day because I don't want to run into a volume block. So I'm going, all right, so it's a business day. It's going, I'm going, see, I'm getting right. And take Bitcoin as we interface with the banking system. It's starting to get shoehorned into the legacy system it was promised to replace. And I'm going, so when you have these kinds of, you know, trials and these threats and this psyop going on in Bitcoin, I'm going, look, are we going to replace the system, ignore the system, come out of the system, or are we going to have meetings where people are going to be talking about what rules we got to comply with to embrace and comply with the system? You know, so I say, Sean, I mean, you can see from my perspective, just a itty bitty teeny weeny bit of rubbing up against the system with Bitcoin, I'm already freaking pissed off. You see my point?
I understand where you're coming from. I've known a lot of people who have dealt with that kind of stuff, and it's not cool and it's not pretty. But it's interesting that the banking system is starting to see Bitcoin as a threat.
Damn, Skippy.
In some manner. So I think that sure it's annoying, sure it's inconvenient. But I think it's an indicator of some level of success.
Of course it is. They need it. Without Bitcoin technology, they're going to lose all kinds of stuff. So I'm like, all right, so who's going to get sucked into the legacy banking system? Those that desire to interface with it, because there's so much money to be made when you got a superior technology. I understand
I think it's more going to come from a change that comes from the inside than the complete destruction of the banking industry. So the idea is that the banking industry is very old money, very less uses of technology. So the idea is if you have a bank that takes advantage of this Bitcoin technology, well, they might sell themselves billions of dollars, and that might allow them to push forward against their competitors. So again, there was a presentation at the OTG Roundtable in terms of ways that we could use this technology to eliminate about $400 billion of waste in the banking system. So I think they have some uses for it, or could have some uses for it. And the Bitcoin technology is going to come from inside them and really change the industry.
Yeah, going to want to influence how it's being used, who can use it, what kind of competition is going to be allowed. I mean, I've gone down this road before. So I'm just going, all right, more questions. You know, Sean gonna help us out. Maybe he might even not recognize some of the things that were said as problems. We'll find out.
If you want to move...
Yeah, this is I need to know. You know, I understand the superiority of the technology, which is all the more reason for them, you know, like, damn, we got to get control and have in this one line of code and kind of, and it's just a little bit, it's just a camel nose. I mean, you know, what's the problem? You just got a camel nose in the tent. So this is what I'm looking for, these presentations. You know, I have absolutely no doubt. When I got, you know, we look at the timing on this. I get Wall Street Journal just last week, about the time of all this other stuff, comes out and says Bitcoin blockchain technology is the greatest advancement in finance in 500 years. Well, of course it is. Okay, now what? We must mold it to our will. You know that. So I'm wondering. And then we have an article we put up yesterday. Who owns Bitcoin by Satoshi Nakamoto Institute. And I'm going. You read that and you look at it and you're going, okay, yeah, this might play out this way. So I just wanted to get a flavor for the people that are going there. I mean, is there argument that we need to what? I mean, is it just it was a cross promotion of everybody meet everybody? Or was there something? And then it's a, you know, and I know Roger Ver, if he's in, you know, off on the corner of some deck next to the beach having discussion or whatever, that is the future, you know, of what's being advocated. So I'm trying to get a bead for myself and everybody else. As we go into the Bitcoin summit, the whole purpose of that is not this. It's not the internal baseball stuff. This is new adopters and merchants. We are setting it up, the meetup guys, the local Bitcoin people, a lot of people in the space, a lot of our subscribers and influence we have here in the Valley. We're going to fill up a room, you know, with a bunch of new adoption. But the thing is that how much do we tell them about this battle between totally distributed, they don't know, no permission slip, and then over here, because I'll have a non-FinCEN Bitcoin ATM sitting right there. Well, what do I tell them? Now I tell them what the law is, tell them how it's being enforced. It's arbitrary. And I'm just wondering what side the smartest people in the smartest people room, you know, represented by you guys there, what is the plan? Is there a plan? Is blockchain technology going to be, you know, developed where it has absolutely no concern for some imaginary lines on the earth? You see my point?
Yeah, sure. So I guess you get into the whole ethics of various solutions. And I think it's important to plant the seed. So the idea is that you can use this blockchain technology in whatever way you like, but you build out systems where essentially these companies, whether in a centralized manner or decentralized manner, can see the power of this technology and see the money it can save and the good it can do for their business. You plant the seed. And I think they'll start to turn around. So the idea is that anyone gets into Bitcoin, you or me, you know, the first day we hear about it or we start researching it, we're just like, what is this magical cryptocurrency mumbo jumbo thing? But then as we learn, we're like, wow, this could actually change things and actually influence me and the world. But for companies, you have to have them to have that aha or eureka moment. So you start out with whatever solution, you know, could save them money as a business. And then
when you're talking about saving them money and you're really taking away $400 billion in profit for somebody.
Probably that. Yeah. That is true.
All right, here we go. Here we go.
Coming Radio back. Network Program Guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Sean Wilkinson from Storjia, help us out. Storj.io. It's a blockchain technology of kind of, man, you just any and everything and stored and safe and encrypted, and you can't have it. You know, it's a Dropbox with, yeah, here's the file, Mr. NSA man, let me know how how that works out for you. So I'm just going, this is the kind of things that you would expect to come out of this. When I went to Consumer Electronics Show, and we covered that, I've gone, I don't know, a bunch of times, and blockchain.info was there last year and again this year, and I heard that there was some Bitcoin company that was there even a year before, and I didn't know about that. This year, they put on the dog. I mean, it's like, all right, you want to walk through, we're going to show you, have people to talk to you about what it is, how it's created, how it's mined, how it's exchanged, how the wallet's used, or the user interface, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, all right, cool. So we go and we talk to the guys. I was convinced enough that here we go. It's not going to be stopped. It may be embraced. That was even scarier to me. The total rejection of Bitcoin, I didn't think was going to happen. But my concern is the total embracing of it by governments. They're going, look, if you can't beat them, we're going to conjoin with them. So I'm going, okay. So I understood then. I made the decision. I held off on converting a lot of my silver. I've been trading it, just using it, and getting discounts of service of people kind of playing. But now, I tell you right off the bat, Airbits is finally the first wallet that I put on my wife's phone. I mean, it was so user interface friendly and kind of did some of the default. I'm going, good, that one. So I put it on there, got my grandma adjust button. So I'm going, all right. So it's coming. Well, what do? I trade in some of my silver and converted it to Bitcoin, learned to do paper wallets, got a computer and printer I keep offline. I'm going to learn how to do it, and Tuck's going to help me out. So my son, we flew up in his plane, just went up to Vegas from Phoenix, boom, kind of spent the day, thank you very much, came back, now I know how to do it. The reason I did that is not because of how the wide adoption that I believe that's coming naturally, I knew that was coming, but that's at a regular rate. What I knew the adoption was going to be was from government. There is no way they're going to be able to abandon this technology. It is coming. And when that happens and BitPay is working with NCR to put it in point of sale machines, and I'm going, here we go. 3 to 8 years. I already see where this goes. So I'm going, all right, well, we'll go ahead and put this. I'll just set this up over here in a little, multi-sig of a 3 of 5 and the time capsule tattooed on my dog's butt and under my grandkids' hairline of whatever the heck. We'll work it out. But the point is, I see it coming. But in that interface, at that time now, I need to know if the people that have been advocating on my show for years about the freedom aspects and traits of Bitcoin are going to hold firm, or are they under attack for capitulation to a little bit of code of maybe it's not as what it used to be. So, Sean, help me out, man. Is there that threat or not?
I know, knowing a lot of these key players, I mean, these people have been around for a while, so they're pretty idealistic in terms of making systems that a government can't control or have these backdoors or all these other problems in these systems. So at least of the people that are in the ecosystem now, they're very libertarian. They're very about user choice and whatnot. So at least with the group now, I don't see that being a problem.
When you have a presentation, somebody gets up and they say, wow, we're going to have $400 billion just off the top that we can see in savings, to the exchange, to the people, to whatever. Okay, in exchange, $400 billion. Well, the other guys are looking at, that's $400-something billion in our profit, you son of a bitch. See my point?
Sure, sure. And then that particular startup disappears somewhat. So, yeah, there's definitely a lot of upset that these decentralized and these distributed technologies may bring. But at the end of the day, someone's saving $400 million. So I think they'd be happy with that on the opposite scale. So.
Oh, young Padawan. Okay, I'm just like, you know, and you're absolutely right. In a logical, you know, scenario, there's savings and efficiencies and all that. But I'm telling you, you know, that's not how government works, man.
Oh, I know that. I know that for a fact.
All right. I want to recognize the danger of being effective. You know what I mean? So I'm going.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit, you know, in just a couple of minutes in this segment about storage. I mean, you know, how far away are you guys from getting on my desktop?
Sure, sure. So we're making very good progress. So we got our funding probably about 4 or 5 months ago. Then right after that, about we released our first piece of software. So that was about 4 months from we got our funding, and we ran that for about 2 months. And so we're just getting like basic testing and data back. So the idea is we're building out this peer-to-peer decentralized network. So we want to kind of figure out like how it works on the data level, on the computer science level, so we make it like really robust and really efficient. So people are early users that participated in our Kickstarter-like crowdfund have access to that, and they're giving us good, solid data from that. And then we're about to roll out our next piece of test software that goes from 100 bytes per person who's selling their hard drive to 100 gigabytes. So we'll get way, way, way more cool data in terms of how this works. So I'm a computer scientist. I'm looking at this from the data perspective. So we want to put out our software to like the power users, have them run it, have them give us good feedback, and get data we can actually act upon and see how this network works. So,
okay, well, describe what it is. I mean, it's what? You know, it's the cloud semi-distributed storage of they can't get to it and only you have it kind of thing.
Right, right. So it's really two portions. So one, it's a system where only you have access to your files because they're secured on your computer before they leave that computer. So they can get hosted anywhere they'd like, but that third party does not have access to those files because they don't have the keys to those files. Only you have that. So if you want to share it with your friend, you can explicitly give him a copy of the keys and he can view it, but no one else in the world can do that.
Illegal! Should be banned. You know, what did we just have happen? And amongst all this other stuff, I mean, we're talking just this month. We have the Paris shootings. I was at Consumer Electronics Show when that happened. All right.
Right.
You know, everybody's sitting there and we're talking and the Bitcoin. Yeah, we knew what this meant. Within days, Cameron, Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, gets up and says personal encryption should be made illegal. So because if you don't, Durka Durka Jihad terrorist Bitcoin. Okay. So I'm going, the pressure is going to be to make exactly what you're doing freaking big time illegal. You got the head of the royal kingdom of the we rule the empire of the sun never sets on people saying that's exact. You know, storage. Lynch him. We need to get Sean Wilkerson in some Tower of London something, and you're not allowed. You see my point?
Sure, sure. So tell that to all the companies like Sony that this got their data hacked and breached. No encryption. Probably a bad idea. So, sure, there will always be the powers that be that try to push back, but it's pretty obvious that we need to go in this direction.
Okay, I agree, but I need to know that Mr. Sean Wilkinson of Stored, STORJ.io, is that, you know, your service becomes useless if it's illegal, or does it say, I don't give a crap what your illegal is, the software is software, it's out there, you know, download it from New Zealand. I mean, you know, what's the difference? You know, so I'm just, this is that is the question. Does it matter if they make it illegal? Will the software hold up? It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Because the exact same type of mindset is what's coming up against Bitcoin right now.
We'll talk about that after the break.
Absolutely. And during, go to the archive. You're going to miss all the good if you don't go to the archive.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
Okay, now this is the question. We get into the last of building up and trying to get an answer to this question. Exactly what you're trying to create, this service that's available to, you know, the Congo kid, you know, with the smartphone on his loincloth, okay, is sitting there going, hey, man, I got all the data and I can do it and encrypted and it's private and you can't have it. And here we have various different levels of government and different governments, hell, entire freaking European zone, union of North and whatever. And they say, the banking system of the Western, the Federal Reserve, and we kind of dictated in the World Bank, whatever, not allowed. Okay? In whatever jurisdiction or method that they do it. And I need to know if the attitude is that you don't care. It doesn't matter. It's going to be available without concern of whatever edict that they come up with because it's software. So either that attitude exists or it doesn't. If they're going to hold up to it or they're not. Because they're going to look for wherever the sensitive spot is and start arresting people. They already have. And a lot of this, when they did Ulbricht's thing and the announcement and all this other crap and, you know, the military-industrial, we're going to kick your ass announcements and all this other stuff. But then Wall Street comes out and said, it's the greatest thing ever, while they put gazillions of dollars into, you know, their guys. So I'm going, I don't know if you guys see this or you don't see it or, you know, or you, it's something. But you can see from my perspective, I've been an activist for decades, before you were born. Okay, so as I see this, it happens the exact same way every time. It is getting in and just changing the direction or flavor from exactly what you guys offer. You see my point?
Right.
So when they say storage is illegal, then what?
So the idea is that we're building this software to be completely open source and completely distributed and completely modular. And building it in portions where the storage building falls down and all the storage devs are gone, the thing still works completely autonomously and just fine. So we have no access to data, files, encryption, anything. The idea is that this network should be able to stand up by itself no matter who's poking at it.
Okay.
Whether it be Syria or another government.
Okay. I just, you know, this is exactly the conversation that I want to have. When we come back, that is it. And the same question goes, you know, for Bitcoin itself. You know, it's like, okay, Bitcoin, this particular use, we need to know. All right, here we go.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Now I want access to all the footage of the Google Glass that Sean Wilkinson always wears. You know, were you wearing your Google Glass at the Satoshi Roundtable event?
I was.
Oh, don't talk to Sean. Don't talk to Sean. Okay. So how do you find that? Is that, you know, advantageous? Do you enjoy that? Do you use it? How do you use it?
Well, it's mostly useful for some basic notifications. I'm not using as much as I used to, but it is integrated with my prescription frame, so I have to wear it to see.
Hey, man, it's just my prescription. Doctor's orders. Okay. So we're looking at, this is the question I'm going to be, everybody's perspective is coming on the show this week. We'll get their take of whatever. Because a lot of the show, you know, in the gathering, it happens off the stage anyway. I mean, you know, it's just networking of the smartest people of the smartest people, and we get, you know, smartest peopleized. So I'm just going, storage technology, there is going to be at 100, 200, whatever countries around the planet, somebody, somewhere, is going to say, oh, I'm sorry, Twitter's turned off, you're not allowed, the Facebook encryption's illegal, and stores especially. And they're going to say, nope. Is the technology in such a form that it doesn't matter?
Absolutely. So we're designing this in such a manner that everything is modular, and everything is very easy to plug and play. So the idea is that this system or any system like it needs to be robust enough to stand up to whatever person who's going to break it on the protocol level or whatnot. So we're designing it in a way so that, A, it's very difficult to detect in terms of using storage. And there's a million different ways to access the network. So the idea is that someone could spin up any website, connect to the storage network, and then you can just request a specific file, and it can pull it for you in its encrypted form, and you can take that file, and then you can decrypt it on your hard drive. So the idea is there's a million ways to get to the network. Through directly or through a proxy. And so you can try to shut it down as much as you can. It's robust enough that's just an infinite game of whack-a-mole.
You know, what you've done, you've helped us a great deal, and you demonstrated that the desire that I had. I wanted the ability to put up video that can be accessed by anyone, that can never be taken down. It can't be censored. It can't be moved. I have a special edition on Freedom's Phoenix called Ernie's Favorites, and I go through, and a lot of it is just material that, you know, to get a perspective, you need to see this series. You need to see this film. You need to see this interview. You need to see that. And I put it up, and of course, you know, Google or YouTube, oh, no, hell no, down. Then it moved. Then it goes somewhere else, and somebody put it up. So I'm sick of that. You know, I want to be able to access this stuff.
So there's so many abuses within the copyright industry in terms of DMCA and other laws. I mean, look at what happened to Mega, and more specific use case is a video they put up, completely their video, completely all their rights, denouncing some of the people in the copyright industry. And then they use their powers that be at Google and other portions to use DMCA to take down that video. That was not their content. That was Mega's promotional content or whatnot. But they use their powers to take it down and to censor it.
Perfect example.
So there's definitely a lot of abuses in there. So we need to build systems that can't be so easily abused.
Well, you demonstrated to me that you had video that could do this very thing and operate without the storage. You sent me one of the HTML5 players that we did. We installed it in the back end of Freedom's Phoenix. We're waiting on storage made safe and these other distributed, you know, networks and so on. We are gearing the back end of Freedom's Phoenix to boom shakalaka. It gets moved over and we have it mirrored and forever and always, and we're not worried about this stuff anymore. But
absolutely.
That technology, that ability is what those that won't leave us alone do not want. I mean, you understand this, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that almost serves a dual purpose. So if you make a system that's resistant to censorship and all these portions, then you also make a robust system. So you're running a business. You don't want your entire website or everything to go down, and that means you're losing money. So you make these systems more robust and more decentralized and less prone to censorship. You also make them better systems. So that's what we're looking from both ends, both from the censorship portion. And the other portion is just making more robust systems that don't fail and don't lose businesses and people money.
And this technology that you use in the blockchain behind this allows for this kind of thinking. And that is where the resistance comes from even having this kind of thinking. Silly status, taxes are for slaves. I mean, you know, so I'm just want to make sure that when this pressure comes, and you're telling me there hasn't been the Men in Black visit to you? I mean, nobody's giving you a hassle?
I mean, we're still at a very early stage, so I don't think we've upset anyone as of yet. But it's all about building a system that can stand up to that kind of pressure, where you build a system where we as a company or any external third party doesn't have access to the data, so they come knocking. We say, well, even if we wanted to help you, we can't, because the system was designed in such a manner that everything's private. And if you make a system that allows those third parties, these three-letter agencies, to go in and sniff around people's data, then you haven't built a good system. The idea is that you can build the biggest wall possible, but if you have a little door, a little back door in there, well, that is a major flaw in that system, that the security model. Who says the authorized party is actually going to go through there to catch some bad guy? How do you know some person won't find that? That's, you know, some hacker somewhere and use that to exploit your files and your data. So the idea is that you should build something where there are no compromises, no flaws, no secret backdoors.
Oh, they don't care about that.
Code is open source.
The man wants to be that person that gets in. You know, I give you an example. There's a series, Black Mirror. They had a great episode on how with the internet, this control of media just doesn't work anymore, and get over it. Then there was a Castle episode. It's a homicide detective kind of thing with
I watched that last night. I watched that show a lot.
Okay, well, Castle, there was the one episode where they had this kind of video chat, you know, thing, and a guy was murdering people using this video chat, you know, Snapchat kind of thing, to where, you know, look at what I'm doing, and the whole thing, we want this person, we need to get him. Oh, I'm sorry, our system's set up to where you can't, and they're anonymized. Oh, heavens to Murgatroyd, there ought to be a law. So in pop culture, they're already, you know, prepping the people for the understanding of, you know, this need that they desire for being able to catch bad guys. How do they determine what's bad guys? You see, I need to know that your system and the philosophy behind it and what you're doing is like, hell no, we're going to be autonomous no matter what. Or it's jurisdictional, or are you even going to be able to survive
again, that's why the system is completely free and open source. So the idea is that anyone with that knowledge can go look and make sure that that system is secure and build more protections into it.
And so you're confident that...
You trust us. You can go look there in our source code and verify that and run it yourself.
Okay.
That's the most important part.
Okay, we got Sean Wilkinson, man. He's on board. He's like, oh, hell no. Do you think the blockchain technology for Bitcoin is going to hold up as well?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it's held up so far, right?
No, I mean, in the core development of them kind of knowing this line of code doesn't white and black Bitcoin have approved and kind of know your customer crap. I mean, you know, how are we?
So that's happening not on the Bitcoin level, on the protocol level. That's happening on the company level. So compromises can be made on essentially company levels when people are building applications and whatnot on top of this. But in terms of Bitcoin itself, it's always been quite secure. Identities are obfuscated in the protocol, so that's not a problem in the protocol. That's a problem in the companies building solutions on top of that.
Okay, so I was talking to Andreas Antonopoulos, and he made it clear to me. He goes, Ernie, the security that you're looking for is going to be at the wallet level. That's where, you know, the blockchain technology is going to whatever. And I'm going, okay. So I just need to, you know, if the technology itself is going to be defended enough by the people that was at Satoshi Roundtable, how much concern do I have about any edict from any jurisdiction of any government? Because Bitcoin was promised to me years ago that it was going to be able to replace the legacy system, not get shoehorned into it. And I'm going, okay. So, you know, Sean, you're of the opinion that the technology is going to remain to where, you know, doing it at Starbucks with a 13-year-old kid off of Craigslist, yeah, that's going to be possible and no problems.
Yeah, as long as it's all open source and everyone can look through what's going on, then transparency solves a lot of those issues.
All right, very cool. Hey, you know, Sean, thanks for coming on and taking the brunt of this on the first try, you know, with everybody.
Sure, but, sure.
How long are we looking at for storage? I mean, we're sitting here for 6 months since June. We've been in the back end getting everything, fixing all our crap and getting ready and for the distributed mirroring of. So we're just waiting on you guys, going as fast as we can, getting the APIs from like Made Safe and, you know, whatever we can get gleaned from you and so on, getting this stuff set up. And I appreciate you sending me that player. That helped a lot too. But, you know, so I'm looking at a time frame of what?
I don't know. So we're building this thing up very gradually, so there's not going to be some magical release date where everything works. So we'll just have to see how developments go. I recommend you sign up for our mailing list at storj.io. We update people every month on how those things are going. So we might have delays. We might have a major breakthrough and like, oh, here it is. So we're just all about building a system and stress testing and getting data, because when we want this thing out there, we want it battle tested. We just don't want to put out a nice little thing and, oh, it's broken or no. We really want to stress test this and battle test and make sure all the points we talked about hold up.
Well, how's it? I mean, are we talking a year, 2 years, 5 years? I mean,
oh, no, it shouldn't be that long. But we hopefully to have some good releases or some starting releases this year. So we're making very, very quick progress. And like I said, it.
Well, how was your funding? How much did you get out of funding?
So we raised about $500,000 worth of Bitcoin. Via our crowdfund. So people purchase early access to the software via that crowdfund. So that's worked out for us quite well, and that allows us to keep the software free and open source and
very cool.
Out of the control of a third party.
Well, how many main developers do you have working on it?
So we have a team of about 25 to 30 people. So we have a mix of full-time, freelance, part-time and volunteers. So everyone works together to do various parts of the software, developers, translators, writers.
So what's your role? Are you managing it? Are you operations guy?
Yeah. I'm the lead developer, and I'm working on kind of organizing and directing this concert of people.
All right, cool. Well, I'll keep you busy.
Yeah, it does. But hey, I get to go to nice conferences like the Satoshi Roundtable. And
well, where are you based? Where do you live?
I'm in Atlanta.
Okay. Yeah, it's not just a hop, skip, and a jump to Phoenix, but you're certainly welcome to come. I mean, you know, and participate. I mean, we have a couple of speaking slots open, but I'm trying to. You know, it might be. Yeah, we'll talk about it. I'll think about it, because what you're doing, it gives you an opportunity to demonstrate what can be done with this technology without having a, you know, a dog in this exchange wallet fight. You know what I mean?
Right, right. I mean, the basic idea is that this is a use case for everyone. So the idea is that you can store your files, or even for your radio show, you don't have to use these other more expensive methods of distribution. You can just say, hey, I put my files out there, and then all your listeners can help distribute it. And then you can attach cool models on it where you incentivize your listeners for getting other listeners.
No, I give you a proof. Yeah, that's a good idea. Thank you. But I mean, this is kind of the scenario I'm thinking of. When we went to Consumer Electronics Show and we did some video, that was right when Watch My Bit was launching. So Drew took and put those up there. We did, David Bailey at Why Bitcoin. We did, Nick over at blockchain.info. We had guys from Kraken. We did BitPay. You know, so these are kind of, I'd like to say they wanted us to put it on there, Watch My Bit. So here's, take it to 11 cents. You know, we can do 9 cents. I go, take it to 11. 11 cents. Okay. So we put it up there, and I'm going, all right, what's the agreement, the artist kind of thing? Well, because they're wanting to use the cloud over at Amazon, where it's on the same server next to this next CIA drone strike in Yemen kind of crap. And I'm going, literally, wow. You think there might be a problem in the future when they don't like whatever the heck it is that's up there. It needs to be a storage type, you know, distributed storage that's encrypted, that then you can use the same Bitcoin player layer on button payment, whatever. And but it's not in a position where I even got to have an artist agreement of complying with they're going to take it down. And I'm going, that is, I love the concept that they have. But immediately I saw the use for what you're doing in creating the same kind of player layer that I can load it up, distributed, put it onto my site, and have a Bitcoin player layer to play the video, which is what we're working on right, not later. So it's because of this points of failure thing, and I don't want to invest all this time and effort, or we have to do it ourselves, when and at the end, the gun to our head, or the threat, or the promise of a bunch of money, and we changed it. That's why I'm concerned.
Yeah, so you saw the proof of concept that I sent you, you know.
However, we ripped it off! I'm like, don't send me something you don't want me to use, man. I'm all over it.
So, yeah, so we're working on that kind of solution, because that's what's needed, right? So we need a way to distribute media that doesn't have any central party.
No, I knew this freaking 20 years ago when the Phil Zimmerman crap was going on. We understood the power of encryption. It meant that government doesn't get to see. And they're all about seeing. I mean, I've had down to the point to where perfectly legal fence, a guy lives in a, you know, upscale area in eastern Phoenix here, and he had a nice, you know, a walled fence that went around his property, and they were trying to get him to tear it down. We came to his aid because the police said, yeah, but we can't see inside. You know, it's on a street thing, is nice place. They just, well, you know, blah, blah, bottom. Well, we just can't see inside. Lord knows what they're doing in there. And I'm going, are you freaking kidding me? Get a drone, man. You know, well, this is before the drones. But the, you know, by getting freaking see, they got drones now. So this is, it's an attitude. You know, it's government. I already know what they're going to do and try and how and what, all that kind of stuff. I just need to know if they can. Does it matter? Does the tech hold up? Well, it comes down to the individuals in the tech to making sure of that. And that's why when they have these meetings, you know, trust us in our trustless society of we're going to trust us in the distributed trust us, and then they have a secret meeting.
You're missing a portion there. It also comes down to the users. So the idea is that you can make the most secure system that's very private and very secure, but at the end of the day, the user is going to some centralized provider, some person who you know, has a backdoor into their system or gives up all their information. So it also comes down to the user to demand those privacy portions. And if the business or the company knows that they're not going to make any money if they put those bad provisions in there, then they won't do it.
Okay, we need to keep it that way. I got to get to my next hour started. Sean, thank you very much.
Sure.
Talk to you later, man. We'll talk again. Bye.
When I say we have a difficult time ahead of us, but if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Humanity marches on, man. It's always been, we've been for decades looking at this, you know, from crossbows to cryptography kind of thing. You know, I'm going, yeah, the man doesn't want the peoples, the serfs, to have access to crossbows because then bolt through the knight's armor and kind of, and they're back to plowing. And I go, no, we're to give them, man. You're not allowed to defend. And cryptography, this is an 88 article that I, man, from as a young activist, we could see what was happening. When you, I was telling Sean Wilkinson of storage this last hour that we'll have him back on again. We like keeping tab of what's going on with storage, but you know, we had a situation here in Arizona where there was a guy that lived in an upscale property, and he had built a, it was like a 10-foot wall, went around, you know, and it's kind of, he just wants to shield himself from, you know, the elements. So he had a wall, perfectly legal, everything's fine. And finally, you know, the city, some neighbors didn't like it, whatever. They were going to his large property, he had a few acres there in, you know, East Valley and downtown kind of area. So he's kind of got his own little enclave in there. He's fine, he's cool, he's a professional and kind of leave me aloneist. The final claim by the government was that he needed to take down that wall because the police couldn't see in. And I'm going, wow. And once that hit, it just kind of, the problem went away. We made a big stake in deal. I mean, are you freaking kidding me? Well, distributed networks, Bitcoin, blockchain technology, distributed storage, you know, made safe kind of stuff. This, and all of a sudden we have the Paris shootings in the United Kingdom. Here comes Cameron, Prime Minister of personal encryption should be illegal, and crush it with our left jackboot or right jackboot or the jackboot, you know, on your throat party. And we're going to go ahead and say, no, you cannot be secret or unobserved. And they go, okay, you can have your wall. We got drones now. So I'm just, you know, where does this stop? In a trustless society to where we have the ability to be able to communicate, store data, share information, be political dissidents, whistleblow. All this is available now. The technology is coming. If it's not already here, it certainly is getting better and easier user interfaces, and we're going to be able to, and grandma adjust buttons. But what happens? Oh, hell no. They're going to come after us. They, them, those won't leave us alone because they're not able to glean information or to play or to surveil or to understand. They don't want Generation Next to be, and I'm over here now, and you know what? You don't get to target me with the advertising or what I'm the, or how much I'm being brainwashed into what vaccine I'm going to have or if I will get it or my grandkid, blah, 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 blah. So I'm going, all right. So this is, I need to know if blockchain technology is going to be, mathematically, I believe it can hold up to outside scrutiny. But those that use the technology to create interfaces for a lot of the people, there's a lot of points of pressure there. And I need to know if this is going to hold up to the pressure of the government that wants to, you know, exert it. All right. So who do we talk to about it? Well, we got several people coming on. Eric Voorhees will be on Friday. We have Bruce Fenton scheduled to come on. Paul Snow, Jeffrey Tucker. We just had Sean Wilkerson. You know, we got David Johnston coming on from Bit Angels. We got, I mean, we're gonna talk to the people. All right, we're gonna find out what's what, and I'm gonna ask these questions because I know you have them. You know what the heck? So let's go ahead and go to David Johnston from Bit Angels, and let me go ahead and we'll read a little bit of bio on here on David. Now, he has a lot of experience in working in blockchain technology. He's kind of focused on Factum with Paul Snow a little bit. You know, the Mastercoin Foundation. I got some questions about that. You know, and on and on and on. David, thanks for coming on the show and helping me. Do you understand my concerns?
I do indeed. It's good to be here.
Okay, so let's go ahead and start with some of the basic questions that I had for Sean. All right. We have, it's Miami, Bitcoin conference is going on, probably about that time. Bruce Fenton says, hey, what's up? We should have our thing in the undisclosed, you know, Jekyll Island, Bilderberg kind of over here thing, which is a lot of the criticism. And you're going to go have the smartest minds in the room of smartest minds. And you're going to go, all right, we're going to have us a confab. And the result and the reason was what?
Well, it was a pretty great conference. We really had a chance. It was almost like a speakers conference where everybody there, I mean, you can see the list right on the Satoshi Roundtable website. So it's sort of funny to think that people said it was secret when just about everybody on the attendee list is right there on the website. But yeah, no, I mean, it was Jeffrey Tucker and Roger Ver and Eric Voorhees, and everybody was just talking about how do we build out blockchain technology. And how do we do it in a way that doesn't get censored? How do we do it in a way that we can keep free of, you know, any sort of interference in the technology? That's what's on the mind of everybody in the ecosystem. So it was a really cool event to really kind of think through how we maintain the freedom of this system. How do we, you know, ensure that with math? And I think the biggest answer to your question is the key is giving the people the direct access to their private keys. The moment that somebody else is holding your password, holding your private key, that causes a big problem, because then you've got some central point and central institution that can, you know, be got at or be censored, right? The whole point of Bitcoin is not to have a point of failure.
And the whole point of government is to have that point.
Exactly.
So yeah, I need to know what the, I need to know what the defense is, or is there a defense? I mean, look at the chronology here. I should write this down because, I mean, damn. You know, we have Ross Ulbricht gets guilty, guilty, guilty. The same day, Ben, what's-his-face, I know Lasky, I hate saying it, but, you know, Ben, what's-his-name, comes out with the New York Department of Financial Service. I write that down. They say, yeah, this is how we're going to rule you and what you got to do and you have to. And you go, okay. So at the conference, they're going, yeah, well, New York's off the table. Screw New York. Or are we going to have to comply a little bit with New York? You got to make New York happy? I don't know. At the same time, they have articles about SOCOM, United States Special Operations, of the, they even say this in the article, combat paramilitary units of the CIA working with SEAL Team Green Beret, we're going to go kick terrorist Bitcoin butt. So I got that to, you know, look out for, you know, and then I'm going, wow, man, these guys are really, you know, playing their hand. They're going, look, we're just going to get some. And I'm going, all right, well, then what do you have? Then we're at the Consumer Electronics Show. You have the Paris shootings. Immediately after that, Cameron comes on, Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, private encryption should be illegal, because we say, you know, and I'm going, wow, this battle is going, it's a psyop. And I need to know if, you know, the people that were at this meeting, which you're right, they are Bitcoin, you know, as interface with the people. The vast majority of Bitcoin users and so on know these people or use their products. And I'm going, all right, so how are they holding up to this onslaught of you're not allowed? So exactly what they're, I just had Sean Wilkinson on, storage, you know, this is exactly what Cameron was talking about. Oh, hell no, we don't want terrorists, you know, having secret communications with secret transfers of secret money without our secret control. How far off am I?
Well, I think on the first note of the Bit license, I think it's still pretty onerous. And that was sort of the conclusion from a lot of people. And I think a lot of services are just not going to be available in New York, or people are going to have to, you know, sort of not be able to offer those services to that jurisdiction, because you're going to have to spend a lot of money to comply with these regulations that they're putting forth. So, you know, we'll see what ends up happening. They go through another review period for another 45 days. But, you know, I'm not ever optimistic about regulation. So I think a lot of people are just sort of saying, well, New York is off the table. It's not a jurisdiction that's going to be Bitcoin friendly. But it's sort of the exception to the rule, right? A lot of the jurisdictions like Texas have been pretty friendly. And I think we're getting, you know, a lot of leave me alone feeling from a lot of...
All right, David Johnston, more. You can see, go to the archive because I will keep talking.
Did you know that Free Aid is a mutual aid, educational, and networking organization?
Yes, I do, but I want to talk to David. Okay. This is... Okay, one thing real quick while I'm thinking of it. When I took my Made Safe stuff and it went into MasterCoin, I got the stuff in there, and I've been afraid to touch it and don't know what that... And kind of make sure I... Am I okay or what?
You should be good to go. You should be able to move the tokens around in your Omni wallet. Just go to omniwallet.org. That's the easiest way to move them around. You should be able to see them and send them. It's pretty easy user interface. If you have any questions, just shoot me an email, or I can get you in with one of the
guys. I didn't want to bug, you know, David and Nick. They know, and I'm just going, hey, okay, yay, I got them, but I mean, now what, you know? So the if I moved them into cold storage or something, that block is still recognized as, or I got to do it a certain way, or what?
Well, it's all tied to that address that you used, right? So as long as you've got the password and the private keys to the address that you used, you're good to go. That's the main thing, you know. You can take a copy of that password and a copy of that private key from the Omni wallet. You can export it. You can, you know, put it on your computer.
Okay, so I got to start off with this Omni wallet thing to make use of it.
Yep, that's the way to go. That's the easiest interface. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm going to need you guys to walk me through this stuff because I'm getting nervous. Sure. I want to be able to put it on kind of safe some, you know, because anyway, so help me out with that when the time comes.
Yeah. And then as soon as it launches, you can use it. So.
Yeah, I'm that's I'm just keeping that one. It'll go shooting up to whatever and down and this and round and everybody in speculative and kind of, you know, whatever. Maybe if I, you know, buy me an island, I might. But, you know, the thing is that, you know, I'm going to keep some at a principle. See, my thing is I like investing in the future that is the type of future that I advocate for the raising of my grandchildren. And I'm just this is the motivation that I have. It's always about that. I've really, you know, I'm good. I long enough have enough successes in whatever advocacy and raising my children, and heck, they, you know, remember my name and everything, and we get along fine. I get to see them a lot, my grandkids. So I'm living large. I'm doing pretty good, you know, but I know what's coming, and I'm going, and knowing that and having some ability to have some influence in it and not doing it, it's kind of like this, you know, Spider-Man syndrome. You got to do it because you can. I mean, you know, so I want to be good grandpa. And part of that good grandpa thing is understanding what's going to impact their future. We did it for our children when we started this in the late 80s. And I understood from the very beginning the power of encryption. And it was, man, a crossbows to cryptography, man. I remember that 88 article back in the day, and it was made it very clear to me. Then the Phil Zimmerman thing, and it's been the same thing. And after this Paris deal, it didn't shock me one little bit. I was shocked it took 2 days, you know, that Cameron comes out and, oh, personal encryption should be illegal. Well, when you got the prime minister saying it should, well, guess what happens right around that? You ain't doing it in the United Kingdom, okay? So I'm going, unless you can just do it.
Well, it's hard to stop math.
Exactly.
Math is very difficult to stop. It's like saying we shouldn't have algebra. Well, you can say that, but some people still are going to know algebra, and people are going to use algebra, and they're sort of just going to continue on with their lives.
All right. Well, I'm going to... Here, let me get my music here. Yeah, we'll do that one. Feel like rock and roll. All right. We'll be back in about 6-7 seconds.
LRN.FM. You can watch the LRN Studio Cam and chat with other listeners anytime at cam.lrn.fm. That's cam.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
All right. We got a list of the guys who's going to help us out. You know, and then we have the, oh, yeah, David. We got the BitcoinSummit.info coming up on Pi Day. You know, that was one thing. Eric's coming on Friday, and I wanted to, Voorhees, and I wanted to talk. We were really excited about the bit drop that was going to be going on in... on some Caribbean island and so on Pi Day, and we couldn't get confirmation that that went through, and they were dealing with the prime minister of some kind of whatever, so you knew the government thing. But I'm going, look, if you're not going to do it, I think Pi Day date is freaking awesome. So we just reset the Freedom Summit, just doing a one-day thing here in Phoenix, and we're going to get edumacated. But it's not going to be a traditional Bitcoin conference where you have a bunch of, you know, the inside Bitcoin, kind of what happened at Satoshi Roundtable. This is for newbies and for merchants, because here in Arizona, I go, you know, we have the capacity to have Bitcoin come to Arizona for your next vacation of, we got everybody in the horseback riding the restaurant and the, you know, Jeep tour, the whatever, take Bitcoin and bring it here. And marijuana is kind of semi-legal here too, so screw Colorado, we can go get high and have some Bitcoin. So I'm going, all right, we're working on that here in Arizona, and that's kind of the mantra that we're doing. And it's being successful. A lot of people, you know, want to come in and hear about what's happening, and we're going to provide them a workshop. The morning's going to be a few presentations to have them understand it, and the lunchtime presentation are going going to be all about the features that you want to look for, depending on what kind of interface you want to have and wallets and so on. And then the afternoon is at least 3 hours of just setting everybody up. $75, you get a lunch that costs us $25-$30. Then you get $25 back in Bitcoin on your wallet and a bunch of vendors and wallets and exchanges that are putting little pieces of Bitcoin incentives to go and get their stuff. And then some merchandise, they'll get a coffee cup back. So it's going to be worth it. We're going to have some fun, but it's different. It is for these new guys. And I'm telling you, David, as I'm talking to my friends and local businesses and all this stuff, what information do I not tell them? Do I tell them that, you know, Bitcoin is under attack or it's being embraced by the government, that you should look for certain features and wallets that you have here, or do you want to be more interface? Do you want to give up your private keys for some of these services and, no, I forgot my whatever, or do you want to go to like an Airbits and it's all encrypted in a package on your new phone? When you start talking about these things to new merchants and new users, then the political and the future of Bitcoin comes into play. Do you not agree?
Well, I think the key is ultimately Bitcoin has to be sold on its utility. So you want the average person to use it just because it's easy to use, just because it's better, just because it doesn't suffer government inflation, just because it clears instantly, just because there are no fees. When I'm talking to new merchants and things like that, I don't necessarily talk about the politics. I don't have to convince them of all those things. All I have to show them is that they're not going to get ripped off by a bunch of bank fees. They're not going to have to wait days and days for the money to come through. It's like cash. And I'll tell you what, Ernest, I mean, cash is king, right? You talk to these cabbies, they don't want credit cards. They pretend their credit card machine is broken. They want cash. They want something that doesn't cost them fees and doesn't cost them money out of their pocket in order to accept the payment. And so when they hear about Bitcoin, that's when they light up, right? And that's, I think, the ultimate thing here is Bitcoin is just better. This technology is just better. You're not going to lose your files, things like that, with these decentralized networks. That's just better than something where, you know, you're relying on a central party. So I think ultimately that's what's going to sell it to the average person. Even if they're, you know, wild about politics or they're agnostic about politics, they care about the money in their pocket and they care about getting cash. And so I really talk about Bitcoin as digital cash when I'm talking to somebody that's new or somebody that's a cabbie.
I don't want them to run into the same situations that I have, which I kind of expect, you know, without some kind of warning. And I'll give you an example. You know, BitPay I've had on for over a year. We did Freedom Summit last year. We had, like, Patrick Byrne and Cody Wilson and Dobby Barker and MK Lords. And we were Bitcoined up, okay? And so we certainly wanted to take Bitcoin, you know, as part of registration fee and everything. You know, I didn't even really look at it. Now they have, or they may have had before, I didn't even know, doing it for this, it's a tier thing. You got to get approved and know your customer, and days go by, and you kind of, I'm like, all right, well, hopefully it's approved now, it's pending or something for days, and I'm going, all right, so I can take, you know, a higher level of Bitcoin acceptance or something, more than, you know, $100 a day or something. So I'm going, okay, so that's kind of, yeah, you know, that's a legacy interface of, yeah, bite me, but, you know, you whatever. So then I go, okay, when Bitcoin went below $200, it's at 170. I mean, just out of principle, I'm wanting to get some. I'd be calling David, hey, sell me some Bitcoin. You go, no. So nobody would sell me any. You know what I'm going? All right, fine. So I'll go to the exchanges just out of principle. I just wanted to be able to get some, you know, a lower price. So I'm going, all right, well, I'm kind of open. It's not like I'm a secret anyway. So I go to Circle. I met them up at Consumer Electronics Show. I understood their interface. I do Express sure. Coin or something. I set fill in. Wow, how much stuff, how many anal probes I got to put up with. So you give them all this information. I give them my Bank of America Visa debit card for my personal account. I go the next week, Sam asked to get some studio cables. Boom. Your card's canceled. Why? Law enforcement sent a batch of compromised number. Kind of next, you got to get the new pretty little chip RFID kind of credit card thing here. It's new. And I go, really? Okay. So I made a big deal out of it. I'm calling customer service, you know, how dare and how come, and I'm embarrassed here at the counter. What can we do to get, can I use the, well, we can turn it on for this one purchase and off, and kind of this, not that, was Bitcoin. And I was thinking, I'm going, God, when did I use it last? I'm going, yeah, I went to Lowe's or Home Depot, maybe they got, and then when I got home, I go, oh yeah, the last time I used it was getting Bitcoin. This is exactly what I'm talking about. As we interface with the legacy system, there's going to be this kind of stuff. And I'm going, is that the goal, is to interface with the system, or is it the goal to replace it, or that's, there isn't a goal, and the businesses in the space have to be concerned? You see my point? I'm wondering where we're going.
Well, my goal is to get to a point where you don't have to interface with the legacy system at all, right? You make a great point, right? The huge friction right now is when we want to move from the old legacy fiat system into digital. And in order to do that, they have to have all this information so they know that you're not going to charge the money back or whatever, because the old system is fundamentally broken. It's fundamentally flawed, right? People can make a transaction and they can call somebody up and say, well, no, I didn't really make that transaction. And so all of these merchants and all of these processors have to worry about fraud, right? As soon as you got Bitcoin, you know you got the Bitcoin, and you don't have to worry about those levels of fraud. And so when you open your blockchain.info wallet, they don't ask your name. They don't ask where you are. They don't need any of that because they're purely in the digital world. They're purely dealing with the crypto side of it.
But the big money, the millions of dollars, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars invested in Bitcoin is not there. It's where it's interfacing, and that's where the influence and the investors and the pressure and David Johnson, you know, might even make some money on that. And we're going to find out.
This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty.
Okay, you see, you divert off, you know, with probably most people, not with me, David. I'm going, holy crap, yeah, it's better. Yeah, it's easier. Yeah, we're going to, you know, have all that. But I go, that is not where this wide adoption mantra that keeps coming from the community is coming from. When they're talking wide adoption, they're talking about permission slips to interface with the brick and mortar merchant of you got an account. I mean, right. don't BS me, man.
Sure. Well, you were asking about the long-term vision. My long-term vision is that we get out of fiat. Look, I took all of my wealth and I converted it into Bitcoin and blockchain assets, right? So I'm trying to get as far away from the old interfaces as I can, right? When I use my Coinbase account, I only use it to interface and buy Bitcoin, and then I transfer it out of that account. Firstly, because I can't control the private keys, and secondly, because, you know, that's not where I want to, you know, put most of my support. I want to put it behind.
Well,
know,
how is that going to be managed by IRS? I mean, they're going, we see that you bought this Bitcoin, and then it makes it into the community, and then it's poof, gone. And what are they going to do? And on this line, declare the profit that you made in the Bitcoin that you hold of the whatever. Do you got to show them how much you got? You got to say that you got? You got to pay capital gains on it if you hold it more? You see my point? I mean, how the hell does that work?
Well, the IRS has come out and pretty much said that you have to report it as capital gains, you know, and it's really sort of more towards like how you would report cash, right? They're not really good mechanisms for tracking cash, but people report cash earnings.
Yeah, but I'm going to, yeah, I spent it. You know, I did green fees and hookers, man. Now what? You see my point? You know, it's like Andreas talking to the Canadian Senate, and he goes, on point of honor, they have me the ability to fill out, and I'm going, yeah, well, I mean, you know, that's pretty much how taxes are done most of the time anyway, but that's why they, because I went through this. I mean, it was eBay comes online, and it's like, cool. I mean, people were creating businesses, and man, this is future. This is awesome. Freedom! Okay? Well, then here comes PayPal. Wow! And here's an easy way of payment, freedom. Then here comes the tax man, and they're sending you forms saying, hey, see, you made a bunch of freedom there in on Bitcoin, I mean on PayPal, and you know, how are you going to claim and owe and you need to give me? And I'm going, then what happens? eBay buys PayPal. So I'm going, no, we're screwed.
Right.
So I'm just, this from, I saw the innovation in private Agora marketplace mentality making money, and the man, you knew it couldn't go more in a few years. Well, sure enough, here it came. And I'm going, and where's the single point of failure? It was the payment system or the merchants or the website. And then eBay buys and they just put PayPal and put it all in one thing, make it easier. I'm going, oh, I feel better now. So then you have Craigslist. The first thing I do when I go buy anything, I say, hey, you take silver? Now I say, do you take Bitcoin? And I get one out of, you know, 10, 15. We'll go, yeah, you get a discount with silver if you buy them. I'm like, yeah, cool. Just out of, I go, damn it, I didn't really want to give it up. But, I mean, you know, now I got to, you know. So this right. is, so I can, it's not hard for me to make the leap of understanding that the all the powers that you're talking about is why they got to, you know, drill down on it. And that I did a circle. Well, I'm definitely not like I wasn't on the list anyway, but now I'm on the freaking digitized, easy to find me list. And right. shut off now his credit card.
I hear where you're coming from. You know, that's the whole pain point in this industry is where it interfaces with the legacy system. You know, that's that is it. You know,
all right, here we go. We're coming back. Here we
yeah, go ahead.
The best liberty-oriented audio streamed around the clock, on the air, and online. This is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Same stuff over and over. You get to be a little more gray, man. You just see it's the same crap. And I'm like, look, the promise that was done for years, I've had all the guys, you know, probably two-thirds of the guys that are on, you know, Satoshi Roundtable list, you know, we've had on the show. In fact, you know, Donna's got a whole button all this week, next week, we're going to find out. And I'm just like, and it's the same question I've been asking all this time. At first, I was going to the anonymity, it's just pseudo-anonymity, which means not. And then you have, you know, all the, you know, Andreas explaining, well, you know, the anonymity that you're looking for is going to be at the wallet level. Then we have Darkwa. Then we got the fight for, you know, are we going to have even the Bitcoin Foundation or not? And what you see, you know, yada, yada, yada. And it all comes down to one thing. The interface between blockchain technology and the very thing it was promised to replace. A whole bunch of government and a whole bunch of fees and a whole bunch of insecurities in the financial systems of the legacy system. That was the promise. And the more that you interface with it, and the more that there's opportunities to make money in this transition thing. Peace be upon thee, I don't care. But when it gets to the point that there's, you know, you want to protect the monopoly or the gravy train, well, we change it a little bit and do a little bit of this of a little bit, and now we make some more money. And I'm going, whoa, I thought it was about making more freedom. You know, so I need to ask David Johnston, I mean, what's the focus here? More money, more freedom, what are we doing here, man?
And my goal is freedom. You know, I wrote my blog about why I became a voluntarist and why, you know, I went through that journey as libertarian, you know, and so I'm not in this, you know, to go back to the old ways. I'm in this to build a new system. One of my goals in life is to reduce the number of monopolies in the world because I think they're inefficient and unethical, right? And so I think the people at the event have that ethos, and so it was a great time to spend with fellow libertarians that had that ethos. So, but you got to go down to the technical level and say, okay, well, how are we going to do it? I mean, just look at how many companies have gone out of business in the space because they couldn't interface with the old legacy system. They couldn't even get a bank account. And so I'm excited about projects like Tether that are trying to get all of these crypto businesses, you know, the ability to interface with that old system without having to touch it themselves. So somebody can just, you know, send dollars to Tether and they make it into this digital asset and you can use it in the crypto world and you don't have to do that interface. So I think that's where this is going to go is you're going to have services like that that try to, you know, specialize these interfaces all around the world so that, you know, the average crypto business doesn't even have to touch the legacy system. They can remove it a step away and they can build their cool stuff and they don't need, you know, to deal with those permissions and everything like that. I think that's going to be really a key for this to grow.
Now, let me ask you this one question of this understanding. There was a an article I just read yesterday. It was called Who Owns Bitcoin from the Satoshi Nakamoto Institute that I just found out about. Somebody called me, you know, I was ranting on the air, and they go, hey, man, hey, you should read this article. I'm like, all right, fine, I'll go on there, I'll read it. And the point that they were making, they're saying, you know, the features of blockchain technology and Bitcoin in particular is such that if you damage those features, the investors, the people that are investing in the technology, that, you know, long-term kind of, you know, investment, they are the ones that kind of really going to have more influence on Bitcoin and its tech, because they're investing in the for the features being of value. If you water it down, or you're dealing with the system, or you're doing, you're going to create a white and black Bitcoin, you know, that, you know, different chains may go off, but the ones that offer the more services, the ones that keep the Satoshi's white paper in mind, those are the ones that are going to have the greater value in the future. Do you believe that?
Yeah, I believe that those that really honor people's privacy will ultimately be more valuable than those services that don't honor people's privacy. And I think that's generally true. You know, people go for where they can get, you know, privacy, and they can get great technology. And if you try to build these little walled gardens where you need permission to enter the system, that's really the key. Is Bitcoin is beautiful because it's a system where you don't need anybody's permission to get in. You don't need anybody's permission to participate. You don't need anybody's permission to send things across the wire. The moment that changes, it loses a lot of its value. And so I think there are a lot of people who will defend that use of Bitcoin as an open system. It's sort of like the internet. The internet would be pretty useless if you had to ask somebody's permission, you know, to send a message from one person to another, right? I mean, they're trying to do that, but it's really hard to stop people from sending messages person to person, you know? And so I think that's the key. If we want to grow this as a global technology, it's got to be like the internet. It's got to be an open system.
All right. I'm, you know, it's a faith in the ability to do. Since forever, you know, in the early 90s, I'm like, okay, I see where this is going. And Echelon and, Carnivore and all this, you know, gleaning information from, email, we likey that, you know, and we'll get all. And then you have Assange in a Newsweek article talking about his experiences and what he realized, you know, Google is a State Department. I mean, you know, I'm going, man, this is getting obvious and bad. And the only way that they can maintain what they're hoping to accomplish in gleaning all this information is the voluntary compliance of the people. And when they come up with tech like blockchain, you know, and even what Paul Snow's doing with the Factum, you know, creating, hell, we had, God, who was it? Ecuador or somebody came up with their own currency, you know, digital currency. Who was that? Do you remember?
Yeah, I think you're right, Ecuador.
And I'm going, okay, well, I just talked to a guy, you know, some of our staff that do a lot of our posting is a family that lives in Ecuador. We had him on for 3 hours last week. You know, tell me about Ecuador. Well, what happens is all of a sudden oil takes a dump in a more socialist country that counts on it being $100, $140, you know, dollars a barrel for them to be able to supply it. Goes, then what? You know, so this is going to have a big impact, I understand. But I'm wondering where the big influences are. You know, as you go down the Satoshi Roundtable, you know, what's the flavor? Are they going, yeah, we're going to have to go to this country to get... I mean, Eric Vorey, I'm really looking forward to talking to Coinapult. Why? Because they go, ah, screw you, we know better. We'll take the other 6 billion people on the planet, and your 300 million can suck it. Okay? So the United States need not apply. Well, this is... We're having people that are expatriating and moving to other countries. Hell, you can't even get a bank account. You know? Because you're American, go away. So I'm going, wow, this is, you're playing with the big bad guys that are coming at you with everything. I just don't know if they can. Where's the weak link in blockchain technology? Is it the developers, the miners, the investors? I mean, is there a weak link? Is it so distributed now it doesn't matter? Where's the weak link, David?
Well, I think it's pretty distributed at this point. I don't know if I could identify any particular weak link. Ultimately, it's about the miners confirming transactions. So I think it really, if there was any, you know, bottleneck, it's having lots of miners, keeping that distributed where there's lots of people participating. So it's very difficult for anybody to try to censor the system. And all of the miners have an economic incentive for not breaking the system because they're making all of their money from the Bitcoin transactions and the Bitcoin reward. So, but ultimately, you know, somebody trying to do censorship, you know, as their mining nodes, if that ever became popular, you know, I think people would opt out and go for a chain where people aren't doing censorship. I mean, ultimately to me, the most important thing is the ability to opt out. That's how we keep all these systems accountable. We're typically, you know, in the nation state, we're stuck in a particular jurisdiction. We just got to put up with whatever regulations or whatever decisions they make. But in the digital world, if something goes wrong, we can always opt out. We can always go to a different service and we can say we're going to take it over here. And I do want to get to your point about people going to different jurisdictions. It's true. I really like the CoinaPool guys. They're based out of Panama and trying to serve the rest of the world. And I think that's great.
Okay. Another good example. God, I'm going to write it down. We're hitting the break. I hate this break stuff. Okay. That's why we always go to the archive. Okay. So I got the exchanges. Are they going to be able to survive? Now, I got a line of questioning we're going to go through when we come back.
Free speech is protected.
Or maybe we'll do it in the archive. Okay. What you're talking about, you just opt out, and you're talking on an individual level, which is fine, you know. But if you're BitPay, or you're Circle, or you're Express, or you're 15 gazillion of these others, you know, you don't have that option. You're either, your business model is built on interfacing with, converting from one currency to another. And if you want to do that, you got to, you know, kiss the ring right here. So I'm going, all right, are they going to be able to survive? We'll just go somewhere else and take our technology and do something else. I don't see how. Their whole business plan is modeled on interfacing.
Well, I think the key is there's a lot of jurisdictions they can go to. You know, if New York is unfriendly, they can go to Texas, they can go to Panama, they can go to places around the world where people are allowed to transact with each other, right? Ultimately, I don't think jurisdictions are monolithic. They don't all agree. They don't all like each other.
They're trying.
The truth is, they try, but they don't do a very good job.
They keep getting more consolidated. I mean, what? I mean, hell, yeah. I look at the freaking European Union. Where you been? I mean, you know, this is all this stuff. It used to be, you know, lira versus franc versus, you know, the Deutschmark and kind of blah, 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 blah. Then all of a sudden, it's the euro. And then you have the Western banks and the International Monetary Fund of the World Bank of Bite Me. Then you got the BRICS come up and say, yeah, well, we're going to over here and do, and what they're really arguing for is a leather chair at the same mahogany table. Then they see these competing jurisdictions or slave ranches that they got. You want access to our slaves, you got to do the slave number of the, you know, interface, we get our cut of the slave. And I'm going, all right, I see what's going on. Then you have Bitcoin comes up, and they see that as competition to both. You will see the BRICS and the central banking system of the West come together in their opposition to people currency. I guarantee freaking it, mark it down. What day is today? Ernie said. Because I'm that sure, okay? So as they do this, you know, and then you have, it's like, you know, if they don't have false flags of, you know, Durka Durka jihads, you know, they sure as hell take advantage of when they create environment they happen anyway. This encryption thing is the battle. I've known this for a long time. You know, this is it.
Well, I take solace in the fact that the genie is not going to go back in the bottle. You know, you can't uninvent Bitcoin, you know, no matter what folks try to do to censor it. You know, it's proven pretty resilient so far. And there have been a lot of unfriendly places for Bitcoin, but we have had a few friendly places. Switzerland's been pretty friendly. Panama's been pretty friendly. Canada's been pretty friendly. And so jurisdictions that don't care as much about maintaining the U.S. monopoly on world currency reserves, you know, they don't have the same incentives, right? You know, the U.S. has this incentive that you're talking about, right, where they don't want competition, but, you know, the rest of the world doesn't necessarily even like that. They don't even necessarily like that the U.S. has the reserve currency. So, yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of consolidation, like you said. But, you know, overall, I think there's still enough jurisdictions where we can get them to compete with each other. And the more of that, the better.
All right. This is, I'm going to mention Eric Voorhees and CoinApult and how they're keeping you know, passwords on certain stuff, but are they in a different situation where that's okay, or are you getting different services for that? And then the bit drop. See, the reason we're doing the Bitcoin Summit.info here, I on Pi Day, I was really excited about going to the bit drop in the Caribbean night scuba diving. I'm like, hell man, I'm on vacation. We're going to rock and roll. And then that kind of, I'm not sure. We'll talk about it. Here we go.
Satellite channel is free to listen to. It's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. David Johnson, Bit Angels. He's been in the space for a while. He knows lots of people, lots of things. He's been able to, you know, glean some resources for himself by, you know, targeting certain tech and kind of, you know, pumping up the interest in and kind of, hello. So, you know, I know David knows. You know, so if I want to find out something, I call Dr. David. You know, whether we agree on everything or not even the point. He's on the inside. He knows. So, David, I was really excited. We had Sarah Blenko come on and talk about BitDrop. They were going to, Coinapult had an idea that they're going to 73,000 population in Dominica or whatever. They're going to give them all wallets, $10, be $1 million thing, demonstrate, and the whole country of them bite me. And I'm going, hell yeah. This is awesome. I think this is a great idea. And I like the scuba. So I'm going, you know what? That's a good plan. I'm going. Donna, vacation time. We're going to Narco Poco at the end of the month here. Then we, you know, right after that, we had something else. And then we're going to there. Let's go. All planned, man. Rock and roll. Then I find out, you know, it's kind of. I don't know what happened, but one of the things that I anticipated, if you're going to have a country and you're dealing with the government there, the prime minister of, well, there's some U.S. and British destroyers that come explain it to you. They go, oh, I'm sorry, didn't you get the memo? You're so hell no not allowed to do it. I'm like, ah, you know, I don't know what the behind the scenes is. Maybe I'll find out from Eric. But the thing is that I'm going, all right, well, that's a cool day, Pi Day. I think that's it's math. You know, I like that. So we'll just do it here. So we're setting that up and just launched everything and did the Facebook and the Twitter page of the, we got the registration turned on and here we go. So I'm going, all right. So you can see from my perspective, whenever you have a big launch of a successful idea like that, there may be somebody that doesn't like it none too much. So I'm wondering, these, when you talk about we'll just move and go over here if the regulation is too onerous, well, a lot of these companies, hell, they're the ones that were navigating all the regulation for us. You know, I talk like Circle or BitPay, you know, so I'm going, you know, or Coinbase now. Tell me the difference between how compliant in the mindset of Coinbase is getting, you know, money from Wall Street, as I understand, and BitPay, they're having to play the same game. Is there a different attitude? I mean, what's the difference there? Tell me what's going to happen.
Well, I think they're basically see themselves as a bridge between the fiat and the crypto world. And so, like you said, they're having to navigate all of these regulations. I mean, it was pretty incredible that Coinbase was able to pull in the first big bank, USAA, into the space through their investment in their recent rounds. So kudos to them for getting, you know, sort of these legacy players to realize that Bitcoin is the future and that this technology is the future. Very excited to see that. So, yeah, they're playing at a whole different level where they have to deal with those partners. And, you know, I really like Fred, Charlie Lee, the whole team there at Coinbase, because I think they've got the same ethics as you and I do, and they really believe in the privacy aspects. And so they're trying to have to do this balance where they've got to, one, comply with all these agencies, but at the same time protect their users and things like that.
So, oh, well, so if far, I got Wall Street giving me, how much was it? Something stupid, 75, 85?
75 million. Yeah.
$75 million under the understanding of some line of paragraph in the contract of thou shalt comply. I guarantee it.
Oh, sure. Well, no, they've been fairly open since the beginning that they're going to go through this with a mind of complying with all the regulations, you know, and ultimately if you're going to touch the legacy system, you know, that's what they're enforcing. That's what all these agencies are enforcing. And so, you know, if you're going to interact with them as a consumer, you just have to realize, you know, that's the deal. As long as you're touching this legacy system, then you're going to have to go through the know your customer, anti-money laundering, all those sorts of things. And so, I mean, that's why I always come back. And I do actually have to give Coinbase kudos for one thing. They finally made it so that you can hold your own private keys in their vault. And so for a long time, people had not been able to hold their private keys on Coinbase. And so I got to give them kudos for making that change, because people were demanding, I want to be able to hold my own money, but I still want to be able to use this service. And so I think that's pressure from the community is pushing them in the right direction.
Okay, now how is that even possible? You got to explain that to me. I hold my own keys, but does that still demonstrate, I mean, they can still see how much they're holding?
They can see how much is being held there. This is part of their vault feature. And it's a multi-signature thing where you've got some of the keys and they've got some of the keys, but they've only got one copy, so they can't move it and they can't change anything about the account. Yeah, they put up a whole blog post about it for those that want to dig into the technical details. It's up on the Coinbase blog. But yeah, that was a good move in the space, and I think made a lot of activists very happy.
No. See, them doing that and supplying that, that's just default people, duh. What I'm concerned about is that the government allows for that. You know, I'm saying, I'm putting money into this exchange, for lack of a better word, whatever it is. I put money in there, and I go, all right, I want to be able to control that Bitcoin. I want to be able to move it. I want to be able to, and they go, okay, we're going to give you most of the, we changed it because, you know, the demand, we're not going to have anybody using it if we don't do that. So Wall Street's like, okay, we kind of do that, which means government. So you go, they go, all right, but they go, but we need to know how much you got. We need to see it. We need to be able to tax it. Okay. So I'm going, all right, so is that what's going on? You can control it, but we get to see it?
Well, I think it's really about, It's not a privacy thing, like you said. It's more about the ability to control it. And so if Coinbase disappeared tomorrow, as long as you've got your password, you've got your private key, then you're not going to lose that Bitcoin, right? Nobody wants, the Mt. Gox risk. Nobody wants the risk that if somebody disappears, you can't get at your Bitcoin. And so I think people are demanding more and more that they have control of their funds, even if they're using these other services.
Okay, so now we get to Coinapult, and Eric Voria understands all this stuff, I am sure. Now, some of the services that they provide, do they have any to where you have total control, or is it always they have your passwords?
Well, the big thing with Coinapult is being able to send Bitcoin through SMS, through text message and email. And really, like you said, they're targeting the other 6 billion people, people that don't even have smartphones are able to send Bitcoin through their system. And I know they're working on technology to give people more control, but sometimes with the simpler phones, you just have to use a service like Coinapult, where they're going to hold the password, and you just shoot a message or a code to them in order to access it. So it depends on the technology you've got in your pocket. But they've done some pretty cool things with their locks, where they can lock in the value of Bitcoin against any local currency that people are used to denominating their purchases in, which is really important for the developing world, where people, a change in 25 or 50 cents or even a dollar is meaningful for people living on a dollar a day, right? So they've done a lot of good work on that front. I got a lot of respect for Eric and his team. And I'm glad they're going after the rest of the world with this technology.
Well, if they're going to do it then where it can be done, and you need somebody you can trust to do it, I mean, I guess we're probably a lot better off having Eric and friends doing it. But the tech has, and this is, of course, at the Bitcoin Summit with merchants and so on, what do we got to do? We're going to look, here are different options, different services and different ways, but the main primary, as like Davi Barker gets up and does a presentation on features you might want to look for and what, I mean, does he emphasize what? That you control it. I mean, we don't want to get in a Mt. Gox thing, but that's exactly what the man wants. Yes, you need regulation. I heard it at Texas Bitcoin Conference last year. The whole thing, well, we don't want to have a Mt. Gox of a Mt. Gox. You got to have, the only way that you can do this is that the government and them know the passwords and they can control and we got and recover and it's yours and we know it. And I'm going, oh, okay.
Well, I think the industry and the best practices people are creating. Now, I'm a big fan of proof of solvency that the exchanges are starting to implement, where they've got to prove to their users they've got as much Bitcoin on their account as they have people using it. So that's the kind of stuff that's ultimately going to secure it. You know, it's not the regulation, it's not a license that's going to protect people. It's good practices like that, where you have audits going on all the time, you know, so that people know these services are on the up and up.
Yeah, see, that's this is the concern that I always have with Bitcoin. I mean, all it takes is a nano moment of it went from there to here and it's not yours anymore. You know, I'm going, I don't want the time it takes you to even convince me that you got the audit of the kind of whatever, hell, it could already be gone in the time it took you to email me, you know? So I'm just going, I'd just as soon just have it myself, and then I got to worry about it. I mean, right?
Right.
Right.
I hear you. That's what I say.
All right. We're going to keep getting edumacated as this goes along. I guarantee freaking it. Well, thanks for, you know, giving us a little bit of a light inside, you know, and I hold on a second. I'll talk to you a little bit more during the break. You guys go to the archive. Well, good it is. You know, but I'm telling you, at least I think I got the right questions asked. I keep insisting on answers, and we're getting some. And I appreciate it. David Johnston, Bit Angels.
Are you looking?
Okay, thank you for coming on and this doing this. But sure. I am not the only one asking or making these points, am I?
No, you're asking the right questions. The right questions are, who has control of the funds? And are you trusting somebody to be your custodian, or are you your own custodian? And the whole point of Bitcoin is being your own custodian.
So at the Satoshi Roundtable event, people are sitting around, they're discussing what? How we can comply and maintain control of the rest of the planet? Because that was my first question. When they were doing talking about doing the bit drop, I'm going, okay, I need to know what you're giving them and what the wallets that you're doing and the tech that we're doing, are you freeing them or are you enslaving them? Are you giving them autonomy, or the first thing the man's going to see is where everybody spent their first $10 in Bitcoin? You know, so I need to know. I mean, I think they should know. You know, I mean, it's great tech, and they may not have the technology in their on their hip pocket to be able to, you know, interface the way they should or whatever. But I don't want to go to the developing world and say, hey, billions of people, we just enslaved you and put you on the grid. Yay, you're free.
No, I hear you. Well, everybody at the Satoshi Roundtable was talking about how you build systems that can't be censored and there are no central points of failure. So, you know, the people there were very tech savvy, and a lot of that discussion was, okay, how do you do that, you know, for mobile phones? How do you do that for these different systems? And there's a lot of good work being done on that front. You know, the truth is, you know, people are working hard to extend the encryption, not just from computers, but into cell phones. And, you know, I think there are a lot of guys doing a really good job with that. I'm a big fan of Bread Wallet because it's the first wallet on a mobile phone that connects directly to the Bitcoin network. It doesn't go to a server. It doesn't ask anybody's permission. It goes directly to the Bitcoin nodes. So I use Bread Wallet on my phone. I recommend it. You know, I know the guys over there, Aaron, and the developers. And so, you know, that's the kind of stuff I want to see. People that are...
Okay, wait a minute. Let me get Donna, get these guys on. Bread sure. Wallet?
Yeah. Bread Wallet's great. They've got the...
And what's
like
the names? Who's the guys? Who's the guys I should have on?
Aaron, their CTO, and also their other founder. I'll shoot you an introduction, but yeah, those guys are great. They came up with the first mobile phone that is directly into the Bitcoin network.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm like, hell yeah.
Yep. Yeah, all do you talk to any developers? They're all excited about Bread Wallet because it doesn't use a central server. It doesn't do anything like that. It goes directly to the Bitcoin network. It's the first mobile Bitcoin wallet to do that.
My goodness. Well, it's just like, you know, having the wallets were the interface to the thing, and their service is eliminating the interface.
Yeah, it's just software. That's exactly it. Yeah, it's Aaron and his partner, Adam. Yeah, those guys are great. I've seen them a couple of times.
Okay, what was the holdup on this tech before? I mean, I'm shocked. I kind of thought that was blockchain.info when it first started, that that's exactly what they were doing.
Well, that's what they're doing on the computer, but on the cell phone and things, you have to go to their server to do the unencrypting. I mean, you've got all the passwords. Blockchain.info is great, but they've got a server between you and the network. So Aaron's goal was to go straight to the network.
Wow, that's a big advancement, is it not?
Yep, it definitely is.
Well, I mean, that's a thou shalt not have permission slip to do that. You know, I mean, we see, we had Brian Sovereign come on. You know who Brian Sovereign is? Stephanie sure. Murphy's significant. You know, Brian's come on a couple of times in the last couple of weeks, and we were really getting a good understanding of F-Droid and Dark Android. In fact, the reason we had him on is because Andreas suggested that we have him on and to talk about the Lighthouse project and stuff. So I'm going, okay, all right. So we get Brian on, and he's unlocking and freeing your Android phone of stripping off all of the Google, you know, they own me crap. And if I, you know, do that and you start having applications that go on this freed phone that has what you're talking about, this bread thing, then I'm going, you know, there's a lot of possibilities of bypassing the whole legacy system, and they can't say and or do anything. And certainly when you're starting to deal with outer net or SMS that you can't even tell what, I mean, see, I understand this, all the more reason when I see they make maximum use of whatever propaganda they can. Ross Ulbricht, guilty, guilty, guilty. Here's Department of Financial Services, of blah, blah, what you got to have in license of whatever. Here's the military industrial, we're going to whip your ass, and anybody doing Bitcoin without us knowing must be a terrorist. And you got, you know, heads of the British Empire sitting there going, oh, it's illegal, you're not allowed to be secret. I mean, how many freaking storm clouds I got to see to understand a storm's coming?
Yep, no, I hear you. Well, I'll get you introduced to Adam and Aaron from Red Wallet. These guys are great. And, yeah, I think they'll really like talking to him. I'll shoot the intro right now.
All right, you the man. David, thanks for coming on. You know, as time goes on, we'll do more stuff. And pay attention to BitcoinSummit.info, and you'll see what we're doing over there. We already started. The Super Bowl was here, and we had all the, like, 8 pedal cabs with signs promoting it. That really pissed a lot of people off. That was good. Hey, man, I appreciate the time, David.
All right, take care.
You bet. Peace.
And people in the United States. Bin al-Sheib said he recognized the interpreter from his time in a secret CIA black site. He said, in English, "The problem is I cannot trust him because he was working at the black site with the CIA and we know him from there." Army Colonel Judge James Pohl halted the hearing in the slow-moving case to await motions from the attorneys on how to handle the latest infiltration allegations. A second detainee also identified the interpreter as being present at a secret prison. The hearing at the Guantanamo Bay Military Prison in Cuba was the first in the hearing since the December release of a U.S. Senate committee report detailing torture methods used under a secret U.S. detention and interrogation program. Defense attorneys claimed in April that FBI agents bugged rooms where they had met with clients. They also said agents questioned support staff about the defense attorneys and investigated at least one of the lawyers. Pohl then stopped the hearing and ordered a Justice Department investigation. Monday's hearing was a resumption of the April hearings. This has been FPP Radio News, online at fppradio.com.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us, but if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Benny, William Benny, NSA whistle. whistleblowing kind of damn. It's time to have him on. We introduced him to Richard Grove from Tragedy and Hope, and they did. I got to see the 3-hour director cut kind of thing, edited down to probably an hour and a half, and damn. I mean, damn. You know, as we're talking, it's appropriate today that we have Bill Binney on because in the first and second hour, we're talking about Satoshi Roundtable of the Bitcoin Conference in the Caribbean Secret Island of, and they're, you know, discussing the powers of the universe against the powers that think they're the universe. And I'm going, you know, this is perfect to talk to Bill about the capabilities and the desire to squash any, you're not permission slipped allowed to have data that's secret, that's encrypted. You're not allowed to do transaction. Not allowed to, you know, have videos and whistleblowing and documents and stuff out there without them having the ability to say no. Nah. So, you know, I want to, let's go introduce Bill Binney here. You know, we have a 36-year veteran of America's intelligence community. William Binney resigned from his position as director for global communications intelligence at the National Security Agency and blew the whistle. Damn. After discovering that his efforts to protect the privacy and security of Americans were being undermined by those above him in the chain of command, the NSA data monitoring program, which Binney and his team had developed, codenamed Thin Thread, was being aimed not at foreign targets as intended, but at Americans, codenamed as Stellar Wind, was destroying privacy here and around the world. Binney voices his call to action for the billions of individuals whose rights are currently being violated. William Binney speaks out in this feature-length interview with Tragedy and Hope's Richard Grove, focused on the topic of the ever-growing surveillance state in America. Now, Donna, you make sure you have that in the archive, right? In the third hour, Bill Binney's interview with Tragedy and Hope. We'll make absolutely certain that's there. On January 22nd, 2015, Berlin, Germany, the Government Accountability Project, GAP, is proud to announce that retired NSA Technical Director and GAP client William Bill Binney will accept the Sam Adams Associates for Integrity and Intelligence Award today in Berlin, Germany. And that just happened a little bit ago. The award is presented annually by the Sam Adams Associates for Integrity and Intelligence to a professional who has taken a strong stand for ethics and integrity. There's a link to it. Go to today's archive and you will see. YouTube link info, you get that. Please note, the YouTube upload is currently being burdened with an ad, not of our doing. And we're working to have it removed. All right. Well, you know, Google and NSA and friends and YouTube are looking to have it removed too. So, I mean, the whole thing.
The first 20 minutes this morning.
Oh, Keith Cernick is in, and he's like, I just watched the first 20 minutes of the Tragedy and Hope one.
Yes, sir.
You know, this is, so Bill, you got some friends here, man. Welcome to the show. I'm glad you're still like breathing and stuff.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me.
You know, this is it's awesome. It's awesome. You know, I knew that you and Richard, you know, you spoke the same freaking, yeah, you get it. So I'm just glad that you guys hooked up. How was that experience?
Well, I mean, it's always good to talk to people who are really concerned about what's going on, because it's most people just simply let it pass by and don't really realize or aren't really that concerned about it. I mean, to me, this is the greatest threat to our democracy since our Civil War. I mean, this is really so. It's just so intrusive and so threatening. I don't understand why more Americans aren't upset about this.
I don't think upset is the word as powerless. You know, it's like, yeah, okay, well, what else is new? Of course, you know. And you were in our previous interviews and such, I got to know you a little bit, and I kind of get the impression that you came up from a young man into military intelligence. You go through the process, you segue over the NSA, and you're doing the Lord's work over there to save America. And the Constitution prevented, and there were all kinds of, you know, the church commission and this commission and that and somebody and you shouldn't always and laws that made it to where you could do your work in protecting America, but not that at the expense of violating the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, or surveilling everything on Americans. When you saw that your tech was being used to do that, that's when you called BS on it. So it wasn't the lack of a technical ability to do it. It was a lack of the will to uphold the reasons for their existence to protect the Constitution. So I'm going, this is that mentality that you have, does that exist anymore in the halls of government?
That's my problem. You see, that's where I'm seeing. And by the way, I don't believe that the American people are powerless. I mean, if we start speaking up, they're going to listen one way or the other. Otherwise, we fire them, get them the hell out of there, and then bring people in who will retroactively look at what they've done and indict them and have them have their day in court where they can go in and talk about what they did and why they did it.
Absolutely. I'm going to go citizens arrest them and take them to Eric Holder and say, go get them.
Exactly.
So, yeah, we'll see how that works out.
We can't sit by. Otherwise, we can do what I've been suggesting, which is kind of radical, but I believe in that the Constitution was set forth by our founders to allow us to be able to hold Washington accountable. And that's under Article 5. We can have that constitutional convention by the states and have them go and rewrite the Constitution to incorporate a special prosecutor that can be appointed by the states to prosecute everyone in D.C. That's really part of that was built into the Constitution because our founders did not trust central government. That was the whole point of it.
You know, here we have, I just had on Freedom's Phoenix today, Sarah Palin's coming out for an Article 5 convention. Let's go, because Sarah thinks exactly like you. She loves America.
Yes. I mean, we can't sit by and let those people in Washington do what they're doing to our Constitution and the values and the principles on which founded our country was founded. I mean, that's really what's going on.
Yeah, here. See, Bill, I'm done with process. You know, process. I'm done with process. I'm done with filling out forms and, you know, voting for freedom. You know, if that was going to work, and I'm done with process. So now we have the first 2 hours. We had gentlemen that are heavily involved in this new Bitcoin blockchain distributed. You're not allowed. You can't stop it. Information transfer of, you know, monetary value and documents and videos, and you can never ever 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 take it down. And bite me. This technology is based on encryption, and I'm wondering, that was your expertise. I mean, how secure are they in this thought process that they can develop and software their way out of government surveillance? Is that even possible?
It's going to be awfully difficult, especially when they have help from many allies and many sources of commercial applications anyway. It's going to be very difficult to do that.
Impossible? I mean, they have to totally come up with a new system of
communication. I don't think it's impossible, but whatever system they come up with, they have to keep it secret from everybody else.
They have to keep it what?
Secret.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you don't, I mean, then they have the idea of how you're encrypting, and that's over half the battle.
Really? So yeah. Encryption, I mean, what you're, you know, so are you familiar enough with the blockchain technology to understand the level of that encryption?
No, I'm not. But if it's public, then they have the idea of what the algorithm does and how it operates. See, that's part of the battle to figure out how to decrypt the system, is to be able to find out what the system, how it operates and how it works.
Oh, that's what Bill did. You think you're all secure out there? We're going to talk more with Bill Binney from the NSA. That was his job. Oh, pay attention. This is a perfect show today.
This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty in Arizona. Now more than ever, we have to seek out good investments to help secure our future. The real estate market across the country today seems to have recovered. Inventories are low, housing prices have gone up over the past year, and money is available to lend. But you must be careful to read between the lines of what the mainstream news is reporting. There is a shadow inventory, and the market is manipulated by a multiple number of factors. And we will need to anticipate this flux and prepare for the next market downturn in housing. There are many communities across the country today that have a growing mindset of preparing to ride out the financial storm. And Arizona is one of those places. If you are interested in moving to the desert southwest, where we have 3 to 4 growing seasons a year, and the sun is readily available for anything solar, I will be here to help you when that time comes.
Feel free to use my webpage at donnahancock.com to search for Arizona properties that are of interest to you. And please feel free to call me at 602-828-1819 to discuss options for your move to Arizona.
Bill?
Yes.
When we come back, I kind of want to pick it up from there is, you know, as someone that did the encryption, you know, and the tech defined it and all that kind of stuff, is I'm going, all right, so you have access to Uber encryption, and that's what, 3/4 of the battle or something? I mean, just to how they do it, or?
Well, it's at least half the battle. It's like, if you remember the Enigma back in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Half the battle was getting the device, and that's what the Poles did. The Poles recovered the device, and they had actually an Enigma device in being before the war started. And so, and there's a story behind that, but they also passed that to the French and the British after the war started. So that gave them the whole idea of how the structure was, how the machine manipulated data once the settings were in place. And so that was half the battle. So now the only problem was to get the settings, and that's how they broke into Enigma in World War II.
Yeah, I remember the Nazis had the Polish factories making them and, you know, stamping parts, and they just kind of took a little extra part here and there and built a separate one they didn't know about, you know?
That's
right.
It.
Yeah, I think I remember you telling us about that. So, you know, the one thing that I'm looking at, because I don't really understand the math behind or how it's done, but blockchain technology, I'm going, well, you know, I think it's pretty open. They put it up on, you know, it's open source. Everybody can see what it does, you know. So I guess the government says, well, thank you, and we'll take it from here. I mean, you know.
Greg, I'm on the phone. Okay, go ahead.
So, I mean, is it really that simple? If they have access to the open source code of the Bitcoin blockchain, then they got it figured by now?
That's the algorithm. That's half the battle. Now they need the keys.
Well, I mean, do you think they got it? I mean, that's going to be enough for them?
I personally believe it would be, but, you know... I mean, they can actively attack your computer to pull a key off.
That's another thing. I mean, there's so many levels of, have one computer that I have in my gun room that's never touched the internet just to do Bitcoin paper wallets.
That's not a bad idea. You have to have an air gun in the program doing it.
.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now... Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, Keith and I are rock and roll and headbanging tonight. Oh, a little hip action. Woo, we got to go dancing. Yeah, we're going to have a party after the Bitcoin Summit.info. We have, you know, really nice presidential suite that has a balcony that wraps around the end. You get the east and west and south or north version of the view of the valley here. And I tell you, it's really nice. You know, it'll be the party afterwards where we get some, you know, real networking done. But, you know, it's one thing, Bill Binney, from the whistleblower from the NSA, that a lot of his surveillance software that he used to surveil, you know, the big bad guys and possible and potential, and they don't love us outside American borders, they go, hey, Bill, thanks for, you know, that was really good stuff. We're going to turn it on the planet, which included all of us. And I'm wondering, you know, we have a lot of faith in math and cryptography, and that was his job. I mean, with the unlimited freaking resources of the man, they go, hey, man, if we can get access to the tech and open source how you did it, well, hell, we're almost done, you know? And we go, it's impossible. They'll never break the... We'll never, 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 never of the enigma of World War II, and encryption is not as new as you think it is. So now, they're, in your opinion, Bill, you're expert Uber opinion, can the blockchain and Bitcoin technology be pretty, is there any level of math security that the NSA is not going to be able to break, in your opinion?
Well, there certainly is, but the problem is being, you can't give away a lot of the secrets to the system. If you do, then you're basically exposing yourself to all the, because once you give up the software that generates the encryption stream, the algorithm that does that, for example, like they do with RSA or other systems or PGP, things that have to go through NIST where they do testing and all, once you do that, that algorithm is then known by NSA. And so that's over half the battle to get the system. Now, from there on, it's only getting the keys. Now, they can do that any number of ways. So they can actively attack your computer. They can play man-in-the-middle kinds of things and all kinds of games to see you exchanging keys so they can find that and pick it out. So there's it really exposes you to a lot of dangers you wouldn't think you would necessarily be exposed to, but those kinds of things are already ways and means they've been using to do these kinds of things. So it's not, you know, you're not secure, even if you have really sound math behind your encryption.
All right. I'm really looking at the abilities there. That's kind of your expert and your opinion on, you know, we can go whip up. But you are of the opinion that the United States government was to protect against other elements of the United States government with that Constitution piece of paper, you're not allowed stuff, and the laws that you knew were being broken. They said, you know, you even looking for or doing or getting in the middle of, you don't have just probable cause of whatever, and so don't do it. And I'm thinking that the attitude of people that control the highest levels of we get to kick butt, like the NSA, they don't feel limited. Do they? I mean, are they?
No, as a matter of fact, they seem to be rogue agencies that are simply going. As I include CIA with this, as well as our foreign counterparts, GCHQ and various others around the world,
which is British,
and the Five Eyes and other allied countries around the world are all participating in this. So, I mean, they really. I just don't see any government in the world that has any control over any of the intelligence agencies that they've created.
When somebody passed a law limiting, you know, the things like, you know, FISA and different things that you were whistleblowing on, I'm more encouraged by technology that doesn't rely on them complying with the law. They'll have a law. We have these shootings in Paris, and right off the bat, what do we get out of Cameron from the UK? Oh, personal access to encryption is bad. We don't want them to do that, terrorist. You know. So, I mean, is that just PR, or is that just a claim that they want more control and you're not allowed to be secret on anything? I mean, how did you read that?
Well, I just read it as a way of getting more money and more effort and building a bigger empire for the intelligence agencies around the world, because I call this the Paris and Boston and all those things. I call them data bulk failures, because already they've been collecting so much data they can't manage getting through it. For example, let's just assume that the intelligence agencies around the world could muster 20,000 analysts to do terrorism, if that's what they're doing, or say criminal activity. Well, if they focused in on the couple hundred thousand people involved in that, they could be very effective. But when they take those 20,000 and say, look at the world, that's 4 billion people, basically, at least using these phones and emails and things. So if you divide 20,000 into 4 billion, you end up with 200,000 per analyst. Now, no person, no analyst could ever follow 200,000 people. That's impossible. So what they're basically doing is making themselves totally dysfunctional by doing this in the first place.
You know, I tell you, you know, I understand that concept, but I look at it kind of like they're saying, you know, like public education doesn't work. And I go, it works for the guys that created it. I mean, they did this intentionally. So I'm looking at all this data accumulation as to be able to know you're a terrorist. And if it's got somebody that you want to get, regardless of they just enemy of the state, well, you got enough data, you can make up whatever scenario you want.
That's,
you know,
correct. Yep.
They're just making this stuff up.
Totally. Yep.
Well, that's their goal. It isn't to go find the one guy. Hell, they're the ones doing it. The false flag of, you know, the guy had the army boots issued by. I mean, you know, I'm going, come on. This is all about accumulating enough data that they can create any narrative they want.
I call it population control.
You said it out loud. You know, so do you really see that our government is protecting something? They're doing something, for what? For whom?
Well, it's to direct the population of the country to do what the central government wants them to do. I mean, I look at it when Reagan said, President Reagan said that we are a country with a government, and I look at it now as we're a government with a country. I mean, that's what, look at what's going on. Look at the health care, look at all this. It's moving towards government control of everything.
And it's, well, it's okay if it's the United States of America government, isn't it? I mean,
no, it isn't.
No,
that's why our founders put into the Constitution what they did. I mean, they didn't trust the central government. And so, I mean, that was in their, that was the founding principles of what we were supposed to be here as a country, with a government that was responsible to the people. The people were supposed to know what the government was doing, not the reverse. And they were also supposed to be able to check each other internally and in the government. The three branches were supposed to be check and balance against one another, and that's not happening either. So,
well, you know, being at the level of intelligence and so on that you were, which is kind of, you know, near the top, you're in the 1% at least, if not the 1% of the 1%. And I'm going, you know, our interface with the British intelligence. Is there a separation between United States intelligence and the empire at all?
There's very little separation at all. I mean, they're pretty close. It's probably the closest relationship in intelligence in the world.
They're the same thing. I love the opinion. More. Bill Benny, whistleblower, NSA, when we come back here on Declare Your Independence.
Are you tired of governments murdering people around the world?
Yes, I am. Okay. The future of your efforts here and what you did. That was an awesome interview, by the way, with, I think, you know, Richard does a great job at that. I'm really glad you find it, because that's really what you needed. You know, coming on my show is not really, you know, the same kind. You needed to have this narrative that went, you know, beginning to skip to the end, man. And it was, and I haven't seen the edited version, but hell, just watching all the raw material, I could see that. Oh, my God, you know, that, you know, damn, you know, a lot of stuff I didn't know. But the it still comes down to the same thing. Bill, it's your faith in process, in a document, in a promise that's enforced by the very government it was supposed to restrict. I don't see that ever, ever being done.
Well, it certainly isn't being done, you know, in the last 10 years.
Well, how would you do it? I don't even understand how you'd even start.
Well, it takes someone who won't pay attention to political interests, who won't pay attention to anything but the founding principles of this country and the people and concern for the people.
Yeah, how'd that Ron Paul revolution work out? How'd that go?
Right. I'm sorry, what was that?
How did that Ron Paul campaign go?
Yeah,
you know, this
right.
is exactly what you're... I'm telling you, if you had your freaking wish list of exactly... I mean, would you have had any different... I mean, you know, Ron gets up there, congressman, constitution, we're going in principles of and foreign pot, and there, man, he did it, and look what they did to him. But the people got educated. They understand, you know what? I'm done with process. And this, you know, a constitutional convention thing, all they're going to do is just, you know, piss people off, and yeah, that didn't work either, so we're abandoning the whole freaking thing. It's just a delaying tactic.
Well, I think that's the only thing that we really have an option in here. I don't know how
else
we could do it. We, the public, the U.S. public.
I want the ability to just ignore them, to bypass them, to not comply, to be distributed worldwide. See, my whole thing is it's not going to be jurisdictional. It's not going to be, you know, it's always, it's very clear. Certainly from listening to a lot of what you had to say is that there are these jurisdictions and these countries, and to have access to my slaves on my ranch, you need to pay whatever troll toll to, you know, to me, the government, in the form of tariffs or fees or whatever the hell it is. And if they are going to access your slaves, well, then they got to pay the toll on, you know, yada yada. Well, all these young people, next generation, they're creating interfaces. They just go direct. They're peer-to-peer. They're downloading and uploading and loading and bite me. And then what? Well, you're not allowed. We passed the law. Yeah, you're confusing me with someone that, one, has the time to read your law, cares about your law, or recognizes a law. This generation next, there's half the population doesn't have financial services. But they immediately, with even a flip phone, they're going to be able to do Bitcoin with satellite technology, connect of the SMS through the Iridium, blah, blah, blah. It's over. It is so freaking over. And I don't see governments recognizing that. And to try and fix them or make them into something that's going to recognize individual rights in some way, I know we need to talk about that, because I want to give you an opportunity to express yourself on how we're going to use government to protect us from government abuses, and that's really the focus.
Well, I think that that's
no.
Well, that's
wait till we come back on the air. I want you to, I'm prepping you for this, so you can monologue me. All right,
I'm at downsizedc.org.
Listen to LRN.FM on any phone, anytime. 213-493-0309. That's 213-493-0309.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
We talked in the break, and I just want to give you an opportunity to kind of share, all right? This is the main thing. There is process. There was the promise. There was the documents. There was the advocacy for and the support of the people, and because, and how many people actually really support even creating a government. You know, I don't know. But the Declaration of Independence is like, man, and governments are instituted among men for one thing. The individual rights, they don't do that. Alter, abolish. Boom. Done. Next. Well, I'm wondering how alter and abolish them. We got that in there. We're going to do the system of, Sarah Palin just said, we're going to do a constitutional convention. It's all good. Don't worry about it. We'll take care of it. And I'm going, all right, fine. Because I am so done with process. Let them go through this process to show that process doesn't freaking work. And that government always being used to protect us from the abuse of government is like a failure from the freaking beginning, in my opinion. Bill may have, and many other millions of people have a different opinion. So as we go into this 2016 presidential election cycle, I'm going, Bill, man, you're gonna get to have your voice in the druthers of what you want, and they're gonna put you on TV and say, Bill Benny says, what are you gonna say?
I would say that there short of Thomas Jefferson's recommendation or forward thinking that we probably would need a revolution
already
every 200 years. So I mean, other than that, there's only really two options I can see to get Washington moving. Short of just voting everybody that's an incumbent out, that's one way. But the other way is to have that Article 5 constitutional convention by the states. And then modify how elections occur. For example, we could do things like randomly picking from the phone book. I mean, we couldn't do any worse than we've got now. And that would eliminate political parties, all the influence, all that money and campaigning and all that, all those kinds of things.
Congress duty like juries.
I'm sorry?
Be just like juries. Be Congress duty.
Well, yeah, that's what I look at. It's
couldn't be worse.
Public service.
Couldn't
right?
be worse.
That's what it was supposed to be.
Couldn't be worse. And you get a secretary, probably.
Yep. So there's that option. And but we have to have a state's constitutional convention to do it. And that's what I think Sarah Palin's also advocating. So I think that that's the way we can really threaten. I mean, imagine Washington being threatened that way.
Oh, yeah. They're threatened. You know, you're from the NSA. How answerable were you to the government? I mean, how controlled were you by the government? How much information went to the government, that was supposed to be our elected officials? I mean, there's a blank check given by a Congress of go peace out. We don't want to know.
Yes, and in fact, the NSA and CIA and other intelligence agencies are not audited by the federal government. So that's a setup for corruption, for all kinds of manipulation and all kinds of skullduggery that they can get into, which they are doing. So
in from personal experience, I mean, you know this to be true, that they're doing it for a fact of stuff they're not supposed to, and but the law says otherwise.
Oh, sure.
I'm shocked. Did that surprise you?
No. Well, I when I was growing up in the NSA, you know, like for like the first 25 years or so, as a civilian, 4 years in the military, we were pretty much, you know, bound by the FISA agreements, or FISA law, and also the internally there was a process that we had to go through that was really pretty strictly adhered to up until just before 9/11 when Cheney came in. And when Cheney came in, it seemed to, the influence seems to start getting very dark and ugly. And so...
and proud of it, too.
Yeah,
my dying breath,
and
I'm
very proud of it.
Oh hell yeah! It's like, damn it! Didn't you get the memo? You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, well then, as they started doing, certainly, when was your concern first manifested? I mean, was it after 9/11 when you saw that? I mean, what? When did you finally go, no? It was like a group of four or five of you that just kind of, I saw the front line, special report on this. They were like, oh hell no, we're out of here, and you exposed them, and they go, yeah. And it didn't even slow them down, did it?
No, it didn't. In fact, they just kept getting worse. I mean, they, as long as we stayed in channels, they felt safe because they could keep it secret in channels, you know, and threaten people internally. I mean, after all, they co-opted in Nancy Pelosi and Porter Goss and other people on the 4th of October, 2001. Once they got them in private and said, you can't talk to anybody about this program. It's a covert program. It's very secret. We're the only ones being told, and you can't discuss it with anybody. So that's your clearance level, and then you get this briefing on all this domestic spying. And so at that point, either they spoke up or they agreed to it, and all of them agreed to it. So they had their chance to stop it right there. Nancy Pelosi should have said, very simply, you either stop this program or we're going to introduce impeachment proceedings in the House.
And then she's dead, and they got the next guy and the prosecutor of the gun and kind of and sort of and Foster, and you're done. I mean, you know, did you ever think that you're going to go up against the will of Cheney? I mean, you know, who really runs this thing?
Well, Dick Cheney did when he started it, but now President Obama is doing a much better job. I mean,
how?
He's probably doubled down on everything they did.
So he's getting more giddy. Okay.
Yep.
Wow. So the solution is,
I mean, that's why he's so
more
hard
process.
On whistleblowers. He can't afford to have them blowing the whistle on what he's doing. That's the whole point. You'll never know the truth unless you have a whistleblower telling you, because your government will never tell you the truth on this issue.
Well, your experience in talking to Richard Grove over at Tragedy and Hope and his experience with whistleblowing with the SEC and everything, none of that surprised you, did it?
Nope.
So, I mean, you know, this is permeated throughout society as acceptable of whatever. And it doesn't matter. Even if you have congressmen or even law enforcement go, wow, we got to go and get and they're done. You know, there is no dissent. That's why I'm so enthusiastic about math and encryption as being our humanity marches on and our ticket out of I don't give a crap what you pass or do or law. You know, that's if I have to worry or care about the law, it'll eventually get changed and co-opted anyway. I mean, you sat there and watched it happen, Bill.
Yeah, I know, and I tried to stop. I mean, the only way that the math can save us in that sense is, and be assured of doing that, is to have some process that, while you know the process, you may not know any variations that are being added to it by individuals, and they can do this individually by groups of their communities. You know, like you're calling community people you talk to. If you can set up some uniqueness within your group that's separate and different from everyone else, then that multiplies the problems a million-fold for NSA.
Well, I think a lot of these guys, they might be screaming, what do they call it, blockchain diversions, or off-chain, or segue chain, or something. I can't remember what they call it, but it's more stuff, okay, built on this tech.
Yeah, all I'm saying is you have to get into it individually and as individual groups and make something unique within that for
sidechain.
Your group.
I just remembered sidechain. Okay, so I'm going. Well, this is. I'm wondering, as the technology gotten to the point that it's, you know, it's gone past you, you're going, damn man, I'm retired. I quit math school after 30 some years. I mean, or is it encryption? Same old, same old. You've been doing it for a long time.
Well, I always any encryption system I worked on, I always looked at basic consistencies in data, and then once you start those basic consistencies, you build on that and take another look at it and do some more processing, and then you get another view, and then you gradually, step by step, move toward an answer to it. I never started out with any system that automatically had the whole underlying algorithm to begin with. I never did. I never worked on any problem like that.
You know, I'm wondering, the new technology and things that they keep going on about, something like quantum computing, if the power of that's going to change. I mean, is that blipped on your radar at all?
Yes, but the problem is, again, with quantum computing, I mean, that means speed of processing. But it's still dependent on the software that's running on the quantum computer.
Hold on. We'll be right back.
Yep.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Okay, Bill, when we come back, I'm going to, you know, kind of preface it with this. I go, the desire for, well, first off, you know, Keith in the studio goes, how much government pension does Bill get? So I'm sure you have some kind of retirement. But anyway, so there's money there. But I go, the desire for info and control at all levels for everything is from a 1 to 10 is what? And I'm going, that's probably pretty high. And the NSA, and you're dealing with British intelligence and so on, I'm going, there is an enormous capability, enormous amount of resource, enormous kind of, I mean, in any kind of Article 5 convention or whatever that doesn't address that their existence isn't going to do freaking squat for freedom of humanity.
That's correct, yeah. We have discussed this with some people in Congress, the President's Oversight Board, and some other staffers, and we made it pretty clear that if you don't have some way of getting in the knickers of all these intelligence agencies to verify what they are really doing, you have no control and no oversight of them at all.
When there was in the 90s, as a young activist, I remember a minister of parliament gets up in British House and he goes like this. He says, hey, what's this echelon thing? You know, you guys are secretly getting into the fax emails of the whatever, and you're Biden bidding and getting contract of, you know, the business of America's business using our intelligence community to out and get you scumbags. And I'm going, well, one, I'm so shocked, you know. And two, I'm like, that capacity is not going to be given up easily.
No, it isn't. No, in fact, that's one of the main things. That's the whole point. And if you don't have a way of, you can't trust them. They lie to you all the time. I mean, I was a part of that.
Why would you dance with them? Why would you dance with them? Who cares?
I at one point in the office there, when I was still working there, I had to say that I would not lie to anybody for anybody. And you know, that was because they wanted to put a story together that wasn't quite kosher for Congress. They were coming out to get briefed.
Well, yeah, but after that freaking Article 5 convention, they won't be like that anymore, right?
No, they won't.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's what we'll talk about.
I mean, that and Article 5 has got to have the teeth in it. They've got to have teeth where they can actually verify what
All right, well, we're
going to
learn something from it. Yeah. All right, here we go.
All right.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
NSA whistleblower time for us, and he helps us out. You know, but my last question, I want to start in this last segment, is like, you know, one, I'm sure that you retired, you know, after that many years. I mean, you still get, you know, a government pension, I would imagine, some, you know, so there's that connection. I don't know if there's any threat that they can take it away from you or something. That wouldn't surprise me. But the that'll be a new law. They'll get to that one. The desire for information and control at all levels for everything planetary everywhere on a scale of 1 to 10. I'm wondering, you know, the intelligence communities that your Article 5 would challenge in any way. I mean, I'm wondering on 1 to 10, they'd want to retain that ability at, you know, what intensity you think, 1 to 10 there, Bill?
At a minimum, a 9.
Minimum. Okay, so this is a number one kind of who's got to die, you know, or who be controlled and who's got to have, you know, pictures with hookers, you know, smoke marijuana or something as they're going through the process of doing something. I'm going, this is, I don't see this going away, this ability to surveil. Now, you would have, as an Article 5, that part of that discussion and the, you know, refounding of America and whatever, that it would include what?
Well, it has to include the teeth in it that would allow and assure that departments of government knew what other departments were doing. So, in other words, it would be the whistleblowers had made a recommendation to the president, 21 recommendations how to fix NSA and the intelligence community. Really.
I got one. Elimination.
Well, consolidation, elimination, limiting their capacity to do things, yeah. But I guess the point that we were trying to make was that you have to have technical people assigned to the Congress and the courts so they can verify what the internal agencies of the administration are doing. So that I recommended hackers, that we have hackers involved in oversight of these agencies and get them cleared and have them go into any position anywhere in those agencies, get on them, look at the databases they have, look at the processes they have, look at what the analysts are doing, look at everything that they could possibly have. And so they couldn't hide and in secret do kinds of things that they're doing now.
You know, one thing that I'm interested in, I just ask you straight up, that is, I had a gentleman named Nick Dranius from, we worked with him a lot at the Goldwater Institute here, so he's kind of in the, you know, Koch brother crowd of conservative, we rule you thing. And there is a big push for the Article 5 convention. He's at the forefront of, you know, really pushing that. And we had him on, we discussed it and everything, and I'm going, to me it's a dead letter because it doesn't repudiate the debt. I mean, it's like you're going to refound the country, the recommitment of my grandchildren owe all this money and you're tax slave for the rest of your life. And with that in there, I'm not even interested. So are you going to take out the debt? You're going to make somebody else responsible? They just changed the law to where, you know, we're going to be responsible for the derivatives next crash of the whatever the heck's coming next on the taxpayer and too big to fail banking of somebody, you know, gets my money again. And I'm going, wow, this is wow. And if that's not addressed, how is that going to have a country that has any value to anybody in freedom or a standard of living or anything with that debt following us into next generations? Why would we do that?
Well, certainly part of it. I think over half of the debt is owed to the Federal Reserve. And that's because they've been printing money and buying bonds. That debt could, of course, be erased and forgiven if you just get rid of the Federal Reserve.
So, okay, well, I put that on the list, you know. But then even half in the debt, you know, I'm going, oh, I'm still left with half, screw you. You know, I mean, see, I don't see this ending well in any kind of process. It's going to be a repudiation in the minds of the people. And if you're not, you're just keep being enslaved in just a different way with new names and a different process.
Oh, I basically agree. And that's why I like the idea of randomly picking from the phone book to have people go into government. That way, the rotation would be so great that they couldn't lock in. I mean, we've got petrified politicians down in Washington now. They've been there their entire lives. I mean, these people, this is what's really wrong there. I mean, these people look like this is a locked-in career for their entire lives. I mean,
because it is.
Right. And that's what we need to end. We need to end that process.
Okay, that's the solution in your mind. I mean, why would you think? I mean, you have an allegiance. You know, a constitutional swearing America. You know, is a end of itself to have this government to represent. You see what I mean? It's kind of this patriotic nationalism kind of thing.
Yeah, I look at it this way. This is the greatest government that's ever been created on the face of the earth. I mean,
and if that's the best humanity can do, we're better off with none.
I mean, with the founding principles, at least that are in the Constitution, at least that's why everybody in the world wants to come here.
That was a founding promise. There was never.
That's the point. We have to make it real. That's all.
All right. The way to make that real would be to, I don't know, better language, more and for some. I mean, what is the foundational different words on the paper? I mean, what is it that you're hoping to accomplish?
Well, you see, right now we don't have teeth in any of the cross-checking of any parts of the government, either the states to the federal or the federal even within the federal. There's no teeth in any of that. There's no accountability. All you have, if for example, Ford had not pardoned Nixon, I don't believe we'd have had George W. Bush do what he did.
Well, you know, you have there's no teeth in it. Hell, treason was death. You had counterfeiting was death, and I guess unless you're Federal Reserve, you had all kinds of the FISA laws, the very thing that kept you and the NSA from doing certain things were just ignored. See, I don't see words on paper making a difference.
Yes, well, that's the whole point. It can't just be words. It's got to be something meaningful. I don't know how else to put it.
Okay, it's a culture. It's an attitude. I mean, people got to be informed by people like you to let them know that they do got to be vigilant, that they got to, pay attention and go whip ass. And then when they do, I'm sorry, that vote kind of sort of almost counted.
Well, you see, that's the point. It has to be something meaningful and real. And that's what's been missing.
All right, so what are you seeing as support for this Article 5 thing? I mean, I know they're beating the drum, and they're trying to get guys just like you and supportive of, and coming out, and you'll get on the speaking tour. So I'm going, what kind of friends are you in bed with doing that?
Well, I personally am not, because I haven't really heard too much support, except from what you're telling me, that people are now starting to think that way. Although I've been trying to say that for about, a couple of years here.
Oh, there's been that threat, of Constitution Convention. I remember it was right before the Oklahoma City bombing. There was a convention of the state. They were trying to do, they were creating constitutional defense committees in every state. Arizona, they had one here, and it was kind of a clandestine delegates going to, and it's going to have this meeting, the Constitution Convention, they're ready, and Oklahoma City bombing happened, and kind of, maybe not. We'll hold off or do something a different way or whatever. But this is a big push, here in Arizona and around the country. And then, of course, you got, people like John Birch Society freaking out, going, man, they get one more state and they can. And then they have, well, we did it wrong. And it's kind of general calls aren't going to do it. This got to be a specific one and everybody be on board and kind of want to, whatever. It's just a political issue and vote for me. It's just a delaying tactic of the people when the dollar freaking takes a dump, and which be a coming. Real estate starts going down again, which will be a coming. Where do they go? What do they do? What do they embrace? Race. And I'm hoping that we can provide the answer as each other. Just take care of it yourself. Trade and be free amongst yourself. Quit looking for a permission slip. And that is where I'm going from. But the information that we get from you is invaluable. It demonstrates, and that I really encourage. How would people find the interview that you did with Tragedy and Hope? What's the easiest way to go find that?
Well, I think probably just Google my name with the Tragedy and Hope. That should do it. I mean,
Bill Benny, Tragedy and Hope, and it'll come up. Or you can go to the archive for today. We have, what is today's date?
10th.
Yep. So we have February 10, 2015, archive, Declare Your Independence. And what do we have? Sean Wilkinson from Storage, which is a, you know, distributed, you can't get it information of Bite Me. You know, we have David Johnson, represents a bunch of investors in the Bitcoin Leave Me Aloneist community, and Bill Benny from the NSA. Now, the whole purpose of them is trying to make sure they can do what they want to do. So I'm going, okay, we got a really good show today. You go and you get that, and we'll have the Tragedy and Hope video there, or just do Bill Benny, Tragedy and Hope, an hour and a half of, man, you want to know what's really going on and capability of, and why we need to have a big change, as advocated by Bill Benny. You watch that video and you'll know.
You know how...
Awesome! Awesome, right, awesome, awesome. Bill, how are you doing? How are you feeling?
Actually, pretty good. I just got back from Europe. You know, I was over in Germany and Switzerland talking to people about these same issues, and they are of course, much more concerned than we are over here, because they've got living memory of the Stasi and the KGB and what have you in East Germany. So they are really upset about all this stuff, and they actually give me some sense of hope to continue, because... you know, even in England, they're starting to, now there was just a ruling over there that now they're talking about having to have warrants to get into people's emails and stuff like that. So I believe there's still hope to go here with the process. I mean, I'm going to stick with process as best I can.
I don't give a crap what law says in England about the warrant of the what. They don't give a crap. Come on, Bill. I mean, well, of all people on the planet, you would know this.
Yes, but here's the trick of what I've been all about from the beginning, was to get people in Europe upset, to get people in Asia upset, to get the governments upset, to get the governments conflicting with one another, and attack this from multiple directions. Legally, I've sued the government, I've supported lawsuits, and I'm doing that. I've got two lawsuits running now that I support, and so we're taking it through the courts, we're taking it through international, coming back from people being upset overseas and so on. So it's a matter of, in my view, of getting so many angles coming in that they now have to start to think about addressing it. And look at what the Silicon Valley's doing now. They're talking about encrypting and stuff like that, and supporting the California law that says they have privacy rights and all that, and the government just can't come in and take this material, because they're losing billions around the world because of what happened.
You know, this is, I gotta point this out, Bill. I mean, you're killing me. I go, you had these laws there for exactly preventing exactly what they're exactly doing. That's what your whistleblowing was about.
Yeah, and that's why they advertised all the threats they sent at us, because when they sent the FBI at us, that's what they advertised internally in NSA as a way of what we do to whistleblowers if they ever object about what we're doing.
Well, you know, so, we didn't even get to the point of that's why Snowden didn't play inside the system. He saw what happened to you guys.
That's right. And that's why he did it that way. So and then it's more power to him, you know. I supported everything he did, so.
All right. And as this process goes around, one of two things is going to happen. You're going to prove me wrong, or I'm going to get to say, Neon, I told you so. One or the other.
Yep, that's right.
Now, and I
don't disagree with that.
And I'm pretty sure what's going to happen. But my thing is that if we can build our tech outside of the we win, you know, by just ignoring. See, everybody's going, in the Fed. I go, hell, if I got to go through all this bullshit to end the Fed, then I did it wrong. I mean, I just want to be able to ignore them. I go, if I got to go into end them, how the hell are you going to do that? You know, I don't care. Let them do whatever they want. We just, you know, develop our way out of it. And that's what this blockchain technology demonstrates, this encryption. But, you know, they put a lot of faith in the math. And I'm going, okay, well, that's probably better than anything else, except when they got quantum computing of they got the, you know, information of the algorithm kind of, and they rule you now. Then what? You know? So, but then they get off of the system. Then they're starting to do this satellite-based phone-to-phone Africa, little kid, loincloth smartphone thing. And I'm going, okay. So there's a lot of hope that I see coming, but it's going to, we are so dependent on the dollar and the financial system. When it finally cracks, they're going to try and have a net to catch everybody in, and hopefully there'll be some other options for people, and it won't be as bad, and it will be, humanity marches on in a different direction without looking for some process to take care of stuff for them, or something to have faith in. Quit. Have faith in yourself, or hell, yeah. Math, you know, yeah, right. Get a freaking chicken, man. You know, so I'm just, this is real basic stuff that we're working on. And in the background, we have all kinds of encryption that we're putting the faith on in the future of where we're mirroring our site and how we're communicating and all. Because I am always, when I'm given the option, is to go as far away from government as I can, because I don't trust them. And I think someone in your position, having been at the height of intelligence, that had the height of surveillance controls, that had the height of oversight in Congress and testimonies and church commissions and all these laws that come in courts and all that, at the height of that, and they still didn't give a shit.
That's right.
So I'm going, okay, so there's a new process? You're killing me, man.
Well, I mean, we have to try something. I mean, short of revolution, I don't know what else they're
going
to happen.
Well, this revolution is going on. It doesn't have to be violent. It's just a revolution between the ears. It's just like, I break with thee, and throw dog poop on government agents' shoes. I don't care. You know, I don't want to interface with them. I just want to be able to ignore them. And with someone with your ability and your contacts, I really want, you know, I'd like to have you included in some various different events or something. Are you ever in the Southwest?
I'm coming to Austin for SXSW.
What the hell is that?
There's a large convention of people. It has to do with businesses and also movies and things like that that are coming up. It's a pretty big.
On what issue? Surveillance or intelligence?
Well, it has to do with everything, really. I could send you some link or something to it, and you could go take a look at it.
South by Southwest thing? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. I know what that is. All right. Really? You're going to have you speak at the South by Southwest? Okay.
Yeah.
They're widening their net. Well, that's cool. You know, this is, you know, last year's, my sister-in-law, she is one of the head editors in charge of the Do-It-Yourself Network food channel or whatever. You know, like my kids go to New York, they get to get on the Chopped set of the, you know, cooking, whatever the heck. And she went to South by Southwest, and they had all these variables and parameters for taste of humans and whatever, and allowed artificial intelligence to create recipes that then they cooked and gave to the crowd. And it's like, I don't know, chocolate covered weenie bagels or some crap. I mean, you know, the computer just came up with some weird taste combinations and see what people thought of them. They're going, wow, this is pretty good. I had no idea you could mix eggs with, you know, tacks, and it tasted this good. I mean, whatever they were doing. So I'm doing, so that's a, give you kind of a wide range of the things they do there. But you being involved, that's a pop culture wide distribution of information. That's very cool for you.
Yeah, hopefully it'll also, because I'll be talking about some of the programs that are really intrusive in the country. You know, it's like Baker was talking about on 60 Minutes that the U.S. government doesn't randomly tap into networks inside the United States, and I said he's absolutely correct. See, you have to watch the wording.
They don't need to. They got everybody else they're feeding off of.
Well, they don't randomly do it. They direct them. They it's deliberate and directed. You know, it's like the Fairview program, which is one I try to, which is the main one they're using to collect content and metadata about U.S. citizens and their communications, phones, and emails and stuff like that. There's like 80 to 100 taps on the fiber network across the entire United States, and it basically follows the distribution of the population of the United States. The more more heavily populated, the more taps they have. And it's not, if they were only after foreigners, they'd be staying on the coast, okay? So to get the transoceanic cables as they come up into the U.S. But no, this is distributed across the U.S., and so there's not really foreign communication they're after. It's really domestic, and so that's what they're doing. with Fairview, and there are other programs, but that's the main one for all this collection.
I remember when I started doing radio in February 03, right before we actually did the land invasion in Iraq, and we were just, you know, getting all stupid about what we knew was coming. And I remember it was about that time, or maybe early 04, that, what was it, WorldCom, the Trans-Pacific cable boxes that you guys had, you know, we get all data thing, does that ring a bell?
Yes. I mean, that's one of them, yeah.
Well, then, I mean, I'm going, oh, well, of course, you're going to have a Trans-Pacific fiber optic cable of all information thou shalt, and gee, I'm so shocked they put a box on it straight to the NSA. I'm like, okay, you know, and what's to stop them from doing it inside? Oh, that'll be illegal. Well, as a, you know, libertarian political activist, I'm going, oh, well, as long as it's illegal, well, hell, I guess they won't do it then, you know?
Right.
I knew better from the beginning. When this stuff, I'm wondering how much of a shock it was to you after 9/11, you're seeing what they were doing in violation of the law. It surprised you? I mean, did it?
Well, yeah, it did, because, up until then, we had been religiously following the law internally in NSA. So even our partner, Ed Loomis, he couldn't even believe it until after Snowden produced his material. That's the only time he began to believe what we were saying to
Who's
him.
Who's this?
You know? Ed Loomis. He was one of the guys who went out with us back then. He didn't believe that NSA and the government was doing what they were doing.
Wow.
Because, he for such a long time had been conditioned by the government that we follow the law, you know? That's the other point. You see, people in this country are trusting of the government because they're in a position of power and they feel they're telling them the truth. And the government capitalizes on that because of their position. What they do is they repeat the assertions that are outright lies. And, you know, it's like Hitler said, if you're going to tell a lie, make it a big one and tell it often until it's believed. And that's exactly what they've been doing.
This generation next that are, you know, there's a lot of math genius. I mean, these guys, they got some skills. I talk to them on a regular basis, and they see a future without borders or boundaries, kind of this Matrix thing. And I'm going, you know, Neo is freed from, and they unplug and red pills and all that stuff. And I'm going, V for Vendetta, and, you know, the concept of where freedom is found is not in picking one freer country or government over another. It is the option now is not which government, it's government versus none. And that concept is expanding with all kinds of supporting evidence. Any of these stories, all it is just supporting evidence of that eventuality in their minds. So I'm going, do you try and, you know, thwart that? You want to stop it? You want to bring them into your fold of, we got to Article 5? Or do you encourage that mindset as a fertile ground for what you're trying to do?
I would like to encourage it for the kinds of things I'm trying to do, because that's really, I think we still need some kind of central government, some kind of central effort to manage the infrastructure, to manage the defense, that kind of thing. But you know,
okay, why would you say that, though? I mean, I'm just wondering from your perspective, generation, experience.
Well, because there are threats in the world that, you know, like, for example, the Russians are starting to act a little bit obnoxious, to say the least.
Oh, gee, I wonder why.
So I mean, you know, but I mean, you have to have some form of national defense. I mean, that, after all, providing for the national defense was the primary purpose of the federal government.
Yeah, see, that's it. What's the first thing they did?
Yeah.
Death right. To those that, you know, challenge the national defense objective of, we just created the national defense. You know, I'm going, wow. I mean, it started off weird. So this whole thing, when you say national defense, and always national security interest, and I'm going, what happened to the individual security interest? I mean, well, I thought the national security was to defend the security of the individual, not the other way around.
Yeah, that's exactly right, yeah.
You know, but you see, it's always twisted that way.
Yes.
Always. I mean, not some of the time. Every single time, Bill. And I'm just, so it's going to be the evidence that comes out in this effort that I encourage you to do it, if for no other reason than the education we're going to get out of it.
Yeah, well, that's, I intend to make that, you know, this is my life's job now. This is what I'm doing for my life. So I intend to make sure that I continue doing whatever I can to oppose the positions that they've taken and what they've been doing. So,
well, I want to help you get out, you know, whether I agree with you or not. I mean, we have to go through, because it takes, you know, quality, sincere, oath of office, law-abiding, kind of in the position, got the perspective, individuals and history to understand guys like you to be able to put the best possible freaking face on the effort to, can we do it? Because if we don't, then we don't really know. I mean, I know, but I mean, you know, a lot of people need to know. So we're going to go through this effort, and then the solution will be, because I really see humanity keeps marching on, and there is just more and more power down the individual from the point of, you know, fire, the wheel, the printing press, the internet. I mean, damn, you know, here we go. So an encryption is another, you know, advancement on the internet. Kind of, I understand, and please stay a friend of the show, and we'll keep doing what we can to hook you up with whatever, and you just share with us, and we'll make sure you get to have your say, and we'll have a pleasant conversation.
Okay, I mean, I'm all for that, because the more people can hear this kind of thing, the more they'll be informed, the better decisions they'll be able to make, and the more they'll understand what's happening to them.
Yep. Hey, Bill, thank you very much. Congratulations on a great video. I'm really glad you finally got to do a quality. You get to have your say, just uninterrupted. You know, it was awesome.
All right, good. Well, thanks very much then.
All right. Bye-bye, sir.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye.